Welcome to another exciting broadcast day.
Yes, indeedy, deedy, deedy, F indeed. 866-901-ADAM. How say you? That's the segment. You know, let me say something quickly before I say hi to everyone. I did Loveline for all those years. Sorry. I would arrive, we'd just have a full bank of calls. People knew when the show started, they knew when the mics heated up, and they knew when to talk, and they knew when I got here it was time to go. It is my dream that that's the way this goes for the show, that I sit down at 5:59 and we have a full bank of calls, because this is the time I talk to you in a little segment called How Say You. Teresa Strasser.
Good morning, Adam.
Good morning. Bald Brian. Thank God everyone thinks you're retarded for liking In Excess so much. And everyone, by the way, gay. All right.
Another half right.
All right. Now, let me complain quickly before I get to the phones.
Okay.
Not too many people can complain when they fly first class. But as you know, I could complain anywhere.
Doing takes a world-class complainer.
Yes. I flew first class to Arizona and back a couple days ago for some big CBS muckety-muck conference. And let me just start by saying this. I don't know how many times I have to say it, but the part where you get to board the plane first is not a perk.
Right. It's like saying you get to go to prison a day early.
Yes. I mean, look, the flight from Phoenix back to LA is about an hour. The flight is completely full. It's 100% full, not an open seat. When they say, and first class section is two rows, so there's four of us, maybe six of us. When they say, hey, you four or six people get to get on the plane first, and then there's going to be 156 people getting on, and when every one of them is stowed, and when all their luggage is put away, and they're all belted in and out of the bathroom, then we'll take off. Well, that means you sit in the front of a plane while 156 people walk by you and bang your shin with their Samsonite. And you're not sipping champagne. You know what's going on?
What?
You're saying to the stewardess, hey, do you think I could get a Miller Lite? Sweetie, let me just finish getting this overhead stuff. They're helping everyone get onto the plane. So you just sit there and get the stink eye from 156 people, and then you leave. Now, their flight is an hour and 9 minutes. It's an hour flight. They're on the plane 9 minutes before they started pulling away from the gate. Your flight is an hour and 39 minutes because that's how long you were on the plane. Your flight is 50% longer than theirs. Yeah, well, no, first class. First class. And my feeling is load everyone into the plane and then say, now we're ready for His Highness, Mr. Corolla, and the rest of the first class posers. And I put this to you, those idiots who argue with me. Forget the plane. It's a bus ride. It's a bus ride to Phoenix. And you bought a ticket that cost five times as much as everyone else's ticket. Would you get on the bus first and then wait a half hour until the bus was completely loaded and the luggage restored? And then leave? Or would they just come get you at the bar when the bus was ready to go?
There should be something better than first class.
No, first class shouldn't be worse than coach.
What percentage of the...
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
you have a choice. It's who gets loaded first. Well, you know what happened to me both ways?
What?
Now, what happens to me is I go, F it. I'm not going to sit on the plane and be ignored. And by the way, like I said, you don't get poured champagne. You don't get fed grapes. You don't
warm
get
nuts.
Anything. No, they don't have nuts anymore because some puss's kid, hypochondriac kid, is allergic to it one time. And now it's all just pretzels and crappy trail mix and a crappy effing Fiesta mix. Like anyone eats that on the ground, for the love of Christ. But no, I say, come get me. I just sit there, and they'll page, they'll go first class, and every single person will get loaded on the plane, and then they'll go, okay, this is the last call, and then I'll get up from the sports bar, because I'm watching TV drinking a Bloody Mary, as opposed to just sitting in a seat next to a guy I don't know, and then I'll get onto the plane. But you know what happened on the way there and on the way back?
What?
All of the overhead storage in first class was used up. Because they'll put other people's crap in there and just fill every orifice, and I had to check my bag. So I'm flying first class, and I have a carry-on bag, and it's not big, but it has to be checked because I waited until the end to get on the plane. Now, am I nuts? Am I nuts on this one? Isn't the idea to spend as little? What? Let's just go to a full extreme. What if someone said, hey, there's a flight to Phoenix. The flight leaves at 3. Teresa, you get to get on the plane at noon. You'd be like, F that. Oh, yeah, no, for an extra, everyone else on the plane is going to pay $149. You're going to spend $700. You get on the plane at noon. All I'm saying is let's just extrapolate it. Let's keep going. If getting on the plane is such an advantage, if getting on the plane early, how about we get on the plane 5 hours early?
Why do they put the first class travelers on early?
They think it's some kind of privilege. Like, whoa, everyone wait.
Yeah.
Let the first class people get on. But look,
if
I got on the plane and we left, fine. But we're not going anywhere.
One, I'm just happy you haven't lost your common touch. And two, what percentage of the unwashed masses that traipse before you hitting your shin with their Samsonite go, man show guy?
Well, that's the first off. It 90% of flights, 95, maybe 98% of flights, first class is right by the front door.
Yeah, everyone walks by you.
And what happens is it's like when you get pulled over on the side of the freeway. The cops, you don't have to be fighting with the cops. You just got pulled over. People rubberneck. They want to know who got pulled. I don't know. What's going on here? They always want to know who's in first class. When I'm in first class, I look around. Wonder what this guy does.
Yeah.
How he got here. Is he a celebrity? Sure. Not exactly to Phoenix, but the point is everyone does the rubberneck. So, yes, you get the man show guy times 300 people that are getting on the plane. Sometimes you get a conversation. Oftentimes you get the person that then recognized you went and got in their seat. Then you get up in the flight. Then they, you know, you get a little drunk and you're watching your crappy movie. And then they come home. Excuse me, my husband's a big, you know, I don't mind, but I'm just saying, what's the perk? Really? That's a perk? Okay, I know I sound nuts. It's very easily corrected. Just, hey, here's who gets on the plane. And this would be an advantage. Getting on the plane first would be an advantage if they ran out of seats and they had to hold people aside. Like, hey, you're for sure. I paid for my seat. It costs 10 times as much as the seat that's 4 feet behind me. Come get me at the bar. I'll beat the Jody Moroni sausage kingdom over here. Come pry that bratwurst out of my hands and drag my drunken ass to the plane when it's started up. As a matter of fact, when the plane's moving, I want to run and jump into the plane. As it's taxiing, come get me. Ah, first class. Awesome. And then what happened? The plane was delayed, something with the computer. We sat on the ground for another hour and a half. So then, of course, all the first class who got on first, aren't you glad you got on first? We'll tack another hour and a half on an experience. And then this one. And you guys tell me what you think. We'll start a complimentary beverage service. So they start the complimentary beverage service because everyone was on the ground for an hour and a half while the tech guy was working on the computer. Turned out it was water. I've gotten this argument before where they go, well, I'm saying to the guy next to me, water doesn't sound like much of a beverage. Something that comes out of a hose at a gas station does not fit my criteria for beverage. But like, yeah, it's a beverage. Technically, it's a beverage. And I'm like, okay, maybe technically water's a beverage because that's what they were giving out. But let me ask you this. If you went to a restaurant and it said beverage included and you said, oh, give me a Coke. And they said, oh, no, it's just tap water.
Yeah, it's a beverage.
You'd be PO'd, right? You'd be like, why does that say beverage included? All right, hold on a second. Pete?
Yeah.
What's happening, Pete?
What's up? I started some improv classes last week.
Mm-hmm.
And first time out. Pretty terrible.
Mm-hmm.
Just wondering your own experiences first time out.
It makes you nervous and you get this like adrenaline surge and you switch into this say something funny mode. And when you switch into say something funny mode and you're not experienced enough to do it, you will go into foot into mouth mode or bumbling mode.
Exactly.
Less is more. It's like golf. Don't try too hard. When you're trying to learn the technique, and then you can start crushing the ball off the tee. If you try to crush the ball off the tee before you get the stroke down or the technique down, you'll shank it into the woods every time. Nobody will ever blame you. When you do improv, nobody will ever blame you for just keeping the scene going.
So you're just taking the pressure off, Pete, and saying you don't need to be funny. In fact, don't even try to be funny.
Right. Okay.
First.
Right.
Done and done.
We'll do some school. We'll do some quick improv.
See, Pete, I'm taking the pressure off myself right now.
Now, Teresa.
Yes.
You ask me. We'll do an improv scene.
Okay.
We're sitting at a bus stop. We're waiting for a bus, and you just ask me what I do for a living. So we sit down.
Yeah.
Wow, this bus is running late.
Sure is. So, what do you do for a living?
School teacher.
Oh yeah, what grade?
Well, we do K through sixth grade. It's not a public school. I'm not saving the world. I work with kids who have money.
Are they bratty?
Mostly the parents.
Oh.
Okay, now here's my point. That just moved the scene along. When she asked me what I did for a living, I didn't go pirate, farmer, astronaut. I didn't do anything funny. I just answered. We just moved along. I didn't get caught in the headlights. Just answer. Something funny's going to come. A scene will be created, but don't pressure yourself to give that quick funny. See, improv goes south when people ask questions like, what do you do for a living?
Rodeo clown.
Exotic dancer. Right. And then they can't back it up. Or they go, how long have you been working here? Or anything at all.
Actually,
you understand?
Yeah. No, I hear that.
Take the pressure off. You want to do a little, and add information.
Oh, yeah. I always agree. And
you want to do a little improv scene?
Actually, well, the thing I had the biggest problem with, and I thought it would come the easiest, they asked us to do a rant, and I had...
Oh, really?
From yours. I was like, oh, I could even just still do red lights, bus turns.
Yeah.
And then build off of that. But I didn't want to steal that, so I tried going on my own for a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just ran out of steam after like a minute.
Mm-hmm.
And then, that was pretty disappointing.
Hey, Pete.
Adam Crow light.
I appreciate it, but look, baby steps, don't ask for too much too early, and just keep the scene going. No one will ever blame you. No one really, but you don't get punished for not being funny. You get punished for trying to be funny and not be funny. Do you know what I mean? If you think about the people you know who you sort of punish, it's not the ones that aren't funny. It's the ones that try to be funny and aren't funny. How dare you? All right, let's see. Someone's got a question of about a TV show. Julie?
Good morning. How are you guys?
What's happening, baby girl?
I just want to say, first of all, I really love your show.
Thanks, Julie.
The morning radio here in Chicago has a lot to be desired, so I stream your show every day. I love it.
Well, thanks.
Thanks.
I feel like more and more people are doing that, and that's probably going to be the wave of the future.
I think so. Listen, Adam, I really wanted to ask you if you could put some sanity into my marriage, please.
Mm-hmm. What's going on?
Well, my husband is a very hard worker. He gets up at 3 o'clock in the morning. By 7 o'clock, he's pretty tired, so he's dozing on the couch and tosses me the remote and says, here, go ahead, turn on whatever you want.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll turn on, like, say, Grey's Anatomy or something like that. And then he'll continue to complain about what I'm watching for the entire hour that it's on.
Mm-hmm.
The only time I didn't hear any complaining was when... your show, The Adam Carolla Project, was on TLC.
Oh, he enjoyed that.
Because he could listen to you complain
right.
for a half hour.
Complain yeah. for every guy.
A proxy complaint.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, Julie, let me say a couple of things, and I know you're asking about another season of that. I don't think I'm going to do that for a little while, but I have a few other things coming up, and I appreciate it. But here's what I will say. There are ways to save a marriage. You know, people ask me all the time, hey, isn't it tough having twins? And I say, not if you have square footage and money to throw at the problem. If the kids slash the problems, if the problems are up away from you and you've paid someone to look after them and you're downstairs slowly pickling yourself inside a bottle of red wine, then it's not like having kids. If you're in the same room with them in your small bachelor apartment, then you'll want to kill yourself. Same with the marriage. T,
yeah.
You're going to get married soon.
Yeah.
You're already living with your guy.
Mm-hmm.
Let me tell you the best $100 you could ever spend on a relationship, and it would have saved. My parents would probably still be married if this existed.
Okay.
Separate TiVos.
Ooh.
Have your own TiVo.
Done.
Put the bed. Yeah. Most people now, look, stuff's cheap. TVs are cheap. TiVos are cheap. Put the TiVo in the bedroom. That's the old ladies. She can do her Oprahs and her Views and all those shows about the 700-pound woman on Discovery Channel and all
those.
That crap. You go downstairs or you go to the end of the hall. You have your den. You have your sports center and your whatever. And that is it. Let her go. No arguing. Quick oral. Then she goes off and watches her Oprah. That's all.
$100 fix.
Seriously. It really, really is. Otherwise, you're just sitting around arguing over who's on what and what's on what. Doesn't mean you can't go into the den and watch a TV show or a movie. It just means at the end of the day, when people are watching their shows, you go watch your Oprah over here. I'll go watch my car show over here, and we'll never have an argument.
Or Adam, possibly worse than arguing is he's sitting there silently stewing because he has to watch Grey's Anatomy again, and he becomes Mick Resenti and then McCheaty.
Mick Resenti sounds like a cop show from the 70s. Mick Resenti, P.I.
He resents everyone.
Yep, he's former member of the Chicago PD till he was thrown off for punching out a superior officer. Now Mick's a gumshoe working the Badlands, walking the streets of Chicago's South Side at night. I'll say one thing. Say what you want about Mick Resenti. Wait a minute, Nick, who? Resenti. Say what you want about Mick Resenti, but he gets results.
Mick Resenti. He's not passive aggressive. He's aggressive aggressive.
That's right. He has a hot secretary that likes him, and it's clear, and there's a little sexual tension, although he never nails her.
He resents her.
That's right. All right. Let's see. Cheating on his girlfriend. Driver. Bad weather.
Brian, Star Wars girlfriend was on Idol last night. Did you watch it?
Yeah, I did see that. Hold on a second. Hey, John, we're going to get into Star Wars later in the show anyway. John?
Good morning, sir.
Yes, you want to know my thoughts on Scientology?
Absolutely.
Okay. So I would love to criticize Scientology. I really would. But truthfully, I don't know enough about it. And here's how I work as far as religion goes. I'm an atheist, and there's some religions that I look at as getting in the way of me and what I'm doing. I'll give you an example. I'm coming out with a movie in March. It's a nice movie. There's no nudity. There's very little violence. There's very little anything in it. We got an R rating.
What? The Hammer is an R?
You've seen the movie,
yes,
right?
Yes, twice.
Yes, we got an R rating.
The full frontal nudity of Ozzy was perhaps a poor decision.
Now, I'm an atheist who is this close to just killing myself because I can't believe the society we're living in.
It's a boxing movie, and it's not even really violent.
An R rating.
Now, the only violence in it is boxing, but you could turn on the Olympics and watch boxing at noon on a Sunday with your family. It's amateur boxing. There's no nudity. There's no violence. There's no worshiping of the devil. There's no anything. There's two F-bombs. There are two F-bombs. One is yelled by one of the fighters when he's in the ring, and the other, right. I can't even remember where. We have an R rating. We have the same rating that Saw 4 has. We have the same rating that Hostel has. We get the same. Now, I am insane over this. I really do feel like there could be an effing class action lawsuit for this. I feel like I'm being victimized by religion. The idea that you can have these gorno movies, these gore porno movies where women are being abducted and tortured with power tools, and I'd make a nice little friendly, family-friendly, feel-good little my R rating. F-bomb was used. Look, there are movies that have hundreds of people killed in it that get a PG-13. We have no deaths, no nothing. We get an R. That makes me insane, and I know that's religion. I know it's religion. It may not be a priest who decided it, but I know overall religion is to blame on that one, and I'm being punished for it. Now, as far as other religions, I see the kooky ones where the guy's walking down the street and he's dragging his beard and his 9-year-old son has a beard and they're dressed head to toe in black and it's the middle of summer and it's 108 degrees and they're going to go strap a wooden box onto their head and eat. And I think, all right, well, you're just clinically insane. You're just nuts. Fine, go be nuts. And then there's a religion where you kill other people, where you blow stuff up. That I'm definitely against. Now, as far as Scientology goes, they're not blowing anything up. They're not getting in the way of my movie getting an R rating when it should have got a PG and not even a PG-13 in my mind. And they're not traumatizing their kids. All I see is Tom Cruise, who has an endless supply of energy, running around enjoying his life, and John Travolta flying a DC-10 into Burbank and then making love to his wife on the tarmac. So for me, it sounds all right. Now, I don't know how kooky it is. I know they're weird and litigious. I know they're strange, and everyone always tells me. But bottom line, people, do you know how kooky Scientology is? I mean, do you really know? Does the average person really know? And is it kookier than Mormonism or Judaism or being Muslim? Is it really kookier than that? And if it is, give me that kind of kooky. Because I'd much rather have the kind of kooky where I make millions of dollars fulfilling my dreams rather than the ones where I flog myself in some yearly ritual where I drag a cross down Main Street nailed to it and flogging myself in my underpants.
You have your Martian thing. How would I explain this to a Martian? How would I explain? Almost every religion would sound kooky. The newer ones just seem kookier to us.
Yes, because they're new. If I spoke to a Martian and I really broke down the fundamentals of Judaism and the Muslim religion and Christianity and then Scientology, he would probably decide that Scientology was least kooky, especially since it involved some of his brothers and sisters and the mothership. All right, this could go on all morning. We need to take a break.
How Say You was pretty good this morning.
I'd like to keep it going because we have a ton of calls. Let's keep going.
And I've got a little bit of a bombshell.
Oh, you do?
In my romantic life.
Your personal life. All right. Tease bombshell and your words of wisdom. Comedian Doug Benson is coming in here, but I don't see him here yet. Oh, he is here.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, why don't we do that? Well, you drop the bombshell. We'll bring Doug in. We'll take more calls, and we'll keep the party train rolling.
The Adam Carolla Show.
Don't you hate it when you're minding your own business downloading porn and someone sends you an instant message and it's always something like, are you working hard or hardly working? LOL. When someone writes LOL at the end of their own jackass sentence, like they could not foresee the punchline coming. Hardly working, LOL. I hate it. So now whenever somebody writes LOL to me, I immediately write back, SMD. They write back, what does SMD mean? I write back, suck my d***, LOL.
And now comedian Doug Benson is on the Adam Carolla Show.
Such a gentle soul, Doug Benson. That's how I would label you, a gentle soul.
That was dirty.
Doug Benson's going to be at Laugh's Comedy Spot in Seattle, Washington this Friday and Saturday. Doug, always good to see you.
Thanks.
Doug, would you like to speak to someone from Canada?
I would.
Oh, wow. Sure. That sounds exciting.
Where are you from, Doug?
That's north of us, Canada.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm from the south. I'm from San Diego.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Chris, deep south.
Deep, deep south.
Hey, Chris.
Hey, morning, everybody.
What's happening? You're in Calgary?
Yes, I am.
How's that going up there?
A little cold this morning, but we're surviving.
Mm-hmm. You wanted to say what?
I just wanted to say I love the show, and just good morning to everybody, and I'm a big fan of Doug.
How do you, well, that's a coinkydink, because you were on hold for like 20 minutes. So I just punched him up. Hey, Chris, how do you listen to us?
The podcast.
Mm-hmm. So you just go online and podcast. I'm assuming I was saying thanks for saying hi. What do you love most about Doug Benson?
I like the facial expressions he gets on stage when he's doing his bit.
You watched him on Last Comic Standing, Chris?
Yeah, that's where we became big fans.
You got to see him when he's making love.
Oh, my goodness.
What's that like, Doug?
It's awesome.
Doug,
a lot of high-fiving.
Up high and down low?
Yeah, of course.
I love Doug on Best Week Ever. That show is addictive. You turn that show on VH1 and you cannot switch a channel.
Do they have VH1 in Canada?
Oh, wait a minute. Let me pot him up again.
No, we have a version of it.
Oh, you do?
Mm. Yeah. You know what's popular there, Adam, is TLC.
Big
in Canada.
Oh, really? Well, I guess there are people, they're hardy people that like doing things with their hands.
And when it's cold, you're home a lot, so you want to improve your home?
Right. Good point. Hey, Chris?
Yo.
Yeah, good times. Yeah, it is weird. Like out here, the people live in Miami or Los Angeles. I know a lot of people that make a lot of money and have crappy apartments. And they're like, ah, I'm never there. I'm always traveling. I got a really cool car. I have a car that's worth more than the building I live in. And it's a convertible. And I'm always out clubbing. Then I just come home, throw up, masturbate and go back to bed. And then I get up and leave again. So it just becomes like some sort of dorm they're crashing in. What do you got going, Doug? Where do you live? You got a house, apartment?
No, I'm still in an apartment. It's time for me to move up to a house or a condo or something, but I'm just the idea of moving makes me tired just thinking about it, you know, because I've never helped anyone ever move, so whenever I do it, I'm on my own, because you can't call people up and go, help me move, when you're not going to ever help them move.
Try driving a pickup truck from age 19 to age 32.
Yeah, the pickup truck is always the guy that gets called.
And it's not enough that they want to borrow your truck. It's like you come with the truck.
Yeah. Oh, of course.
Hey, could you and your truck come over and help me move? And the move thing, by the way, there's never payment for friends to move. It's always a six-pack of Mickey's Big Mouth or Miller Lite. It's like, you understand that's $3.49. And look, are we in Prohibition? Like, do you have some sort of stash of beer that I can't get to, or if I can I go into any 7-Eleven 24 hours a day as long as I have $4 and get a six-pack? Because the way I'm looking at this, I just put a deck on your house, and you're paying me in something that I could get for $4. That doesn't sound like great payment to me.
People always want to know what you're up to. Hey, what are you up to on Saturday? He's like, I got a pickup truck, and you're asking me what I'm up to on Saturday.
Wait a second. But Doug has really committed himself to being the last person you would ask to help you move.
Yeah. I never ask anybody to take me to the airport, to LAX, because, you know, same drill. I'm not taking them ever. So I always just drive down there and park at one of those places where it costs $47 a day to leave your car there.
Right.
And they wash it for 10 minutes on one of the days.
It is a brilliant life strategy. One, I've never said my dad should write a book, but now I realize my dad should write a book. My dad is one of these guys who walks around like his back is always hurting.
Hell yeah. Mm.
Who drives a sedan that I lease him has no tools and no skills. And so it's one of these things where you go, look, somebody's going to have to. And you just look at my dad and you'll go, forget it. And you'll just go find a stranger. Like, my dad doesn't do anything. He has declared to the world, I am worthless. I play jazz trumpet. That's what my dad does. If you want to sit down and jam with my dad, so be it. Other than that, there'll be nothing built. There'll be nothing moved. There'll be nothing helped. There'll be nothing. And then the cherry on top of that cake, no money. So when you have no money, no truck, you can barely lift your own body, and you're not an electrician, a plumber, a carpenter, you're completely off the hook all the time. And people don't really realize how much you can take advantage of that in life. You just declare you're incompetent and everyone leaves you alone and they don't give you any crap for it.
Yeah, I just hear from somebody when they want a dumb joke about something. That's all I have to do.
Or if they need some pot.
Yeah, I do get that call from time to time. Can you help me get some weed? And I can, but, you know, let's do it with as little me having to run around as possible. You know? Like, the next time I'm getting some, maybe I'll get you some as well.
Can you help me move my bong? I'm there.
No way, man. I don't want any of that bong water spilling on any of my clothes or property or in my car.
All right, let's see. Let's talk to Mark. Mark? No, wait a minute. I'm supposed to go to the other side. Mark, what's happening?
Hey, Adam.
What's going on?
Not a whole lot. I was just wondering. I heard the replay this morning and got some of your viewpoints on the UFC.
Mm-hmm.
And I was kind of wondering what your thoughts were on surfing. Surfers
are amongst the dumbest white people on the planet.
See, I knew you were going to say that.
If not the dumbest. Okay. Well, first off, they smoke a lot of pot, right? Right, Mark?
No, that's not true.
This guy's the first genius surfer. That's why he's calling in.
I'm not saying I'm a genius. I'm just saying that the ones that smoke pot are usually like the 18-year-olds that are just kind of into surfing.
Let me clarify this, Mark. All right, hold on. There's two types of surfers. Tell me if you agree or disagree. There is the guy who's in his 40s who sold his dot-com business for millions of dollars and now just wants to surf. That's a different guy. I'm not talking about that. All the surfers I knew growing up, here's what you have to do when you surf. Surfing is a way of life. It's no hobby, as Spicoli warned us in Fast Times at Ridgemont High. Right? It is not. It is a way of life. Now, let me explain when something becomes a way of life and not a hobby. You are its mistress. You are its bitch. When the waves, when the swell rolls in, you drop your broom, you drop your pencil. I don't care if you're at school, you're at work, wherever you are, and you head to surf. That's what you have to do. So you miss a ton of school because you are surfing all the time. Secondly, you smoke copious amounts of weed. That slows you down. Thirdly, you have no interest other than surfing, which makes you stupid. That's the only thing you focus on. And then fourthly, you hang around with a lot of other retarded guys who surf. And there's a fifth element I'd like to introduce. The polluted, salty brine that is the ocean, especially in Southern California. I do believe there's microorganisms attacking your brain from my fecal matter.
Oh, my God.
I've never met a smart... Kelly Slater's one of the dumbest guys I've ever met.
What about your man crush, Laird?
Okay. Now, he's a big wave surfer. He's a world-class athlete. Right. No surfer.
I'm sorry.
He just happens to do his sport on a surfboard. That doesn't make him a surfer.
I guess he's really smart.
Someone's got a blue... You? Someone has a blue crush.
See, despite the pot, he still has it.
Well, he still has it.
Like Adrian Curry style, I did not get up extra early this morning to get high before coming in here.
No wake and bake today?
No, it's too. I'd rather sleep a little bit longer.
Can you break down something for me? Because I just learned this from phone screener Teddy, that there's two kinds of pot. The kind that affects your body and the kind that affects your mind.
They say there's a body high and a head high.
I want
there's
the head high
indica
only.
Indica and sativa.
Really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And sativa is more of a head thing. Like you're more, they say you're more up. Like if you want to get knocked out and fall asleep, take a nap.
That's then the kush.
Then you do indica.
Indica.
Oh. Mm-hmm. Do you find that to be true?
Yeah, I guess so. But it'll happen eventually. There'll be like some sort of pot, movie or something like how Sideways,
Right.
How
that's they, how they talk Merlot about wine. Good.
What they did for Pinot.
But that's part of why I've always liked pot is because you just sort of always just got what you got. You'd smoke and you go, hey, yeah. I'm really high or I'm not or whatever, you know. But this all these different types, like I don't understand cannabis cup where somebody will smoke like five different types of weed and then determine which one was the best. I mean, they're all in the mix once you've smoked one. You can't, like, cleanse your palate you can't spit out weed in between.
But it would be nice
hits
to have some sort of sommelier.
But if you did cleanse your palate, would be with three breakfast burritos and a bag of Funyuns.
Yeah, and a shower and then a nap, and then I'd be ready to try a new strain.
A little bit of Guitar Hero and back to the sativa.
Yeah, you have to do something in between, but these guys smoke them one after the other, and they talk about the taste, and it really is like wine. They're really into it, but I haven't gotten there yet. I'm getting there a little bit. And then when you go into these pot stores to buy the stuff now, they'll have, I just go to the far right end of the counter because that's where the head high sativa stuff is and the indica's over the other side.
Really?
Then they have this stuff that's, it's indica dominant or sativa dominant.
So it's a hybrid.
They got hybrids, a little bit of each.
Sativa.
It's a 90-point
exactly
weed.
So it gets so complicated. I don't really know what I like. I just like weed.
Hey, Melinda, and look, people do that thing with drugs where they go, hey, man, you don't know where that's been. You don't know how that got here. And I'm like, that's what I like about it. I like that little roll of the dice. I don't know where I've been, and I don't know where I'm going either. I like that part. Like, hey, that coke could be a baby laxative. I'm like, bring it on.
Yeah, people always ask me, how can you smoke weed that people just hand you after shows? And I go, well, because first of all, it was free, so that's awesome. But then on top of that, what are they going to put in weed, it's like a little piece of plant that, and, like, how can you put something in it that's going to,
And
do
just polished a grand slam off at Denny's. Should we track where those eggs have been, where the bacon came from, where the potatoes came from, and how many undocumented workers handled your food before it got to your mouth?
I think there's paraquat in my hash browns.
Hey, Melinda, there's a timely reference.
Hi, Melinda. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
What's going on?
I had some insomnia night before last, anyway, and I was up watching bad television, and I caught you on two separate shows. One, Dawson's Creek.
I was on Dawson's Creek.
Riveting.
Residual on the way.
Yeah, baby.
Bernie Mac.
Oh, and Bernie Mac.
Yep.
Jesus Christ. I've never seen that. I guest starred in Bernie Mac. Like, it wasn't like I walked on and did one scene. I did a bunch of scenes and was like the guest star on a Bernie Mac episode, and I've never seen it.
Yeah, it was riveting. You're missing it big time. You got
damn.
It. So he was funny on Bernie Mac, though.
It was funny, and it was an odd thing to be turning through a television show that you don't even watch and all of a sudden see his head.
Jesus Christ, it missed me twice.
Did the head take up the whole screen?
Just about, not quite.
I got to check the spelling, because you can do that TiVo thing where you punch in a name, you know, just punch in Chuck Heston, or for me it's Pia Zadora. But you punch in the celebrity name, and every time something they do pops up, it'll TiVo it for you.
Yeah.
I think I spelled my name C-O-R-O-L-L-A. Yeah, I got to check that. Yeah, I think it's A.
Also on IMDb.com, they'll say what's coming up, like episodes of things you're on, when they're going to air in the next week or so.
I mean, the Bernie Mac thing is 3 years old. They've run it a bunch of times. It was a primetime show. It was basically a hit when I did it, and I was in like 8 scenes. And I've never, ever seen it.
Was your episode called The One with the White Guy?
Doug Benson, the white guy, is going to be at the Laughs Comedy Spot in Seattle, Washington. That is this Friday and Saturday. Go to laughs.com, or I should say laughscomedy.com for ticket information. Hey, Doug?
Yes, sir.
We got to take ourselves a little break.
Are you going to ask me to hang out, or are you going to
want
me to
hang
go?
Yeah, hang out. You know, I'll tell you what. J.J. Abrams is coming on the show, the guy who just did Cloverfield and does Lost, right? And he did the last Mission Impossible movie, right? I mean, this guy's one of the hottest.
Yes, he did what was probably
directors.
The last Mission Impossible movie.
Really? You don't think they'll...
I think that might be it.
He
but
killed
more,
the franchise?
More because of Tom Cruise than because of J.J. Abrams. I think he did a great job.
Yeah, but how about this? You know, it's kind of weird for us. Like, we all understand 007 James Bond stuff. Don't you think in 20 years our kids will be going, Oh, they're doing another, what's Mission Impossible? Oh, yeah, that's from when my dad, that's from way back in '05. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like,
well,
don't you think that some of these things are just going to keep going with new actors?
But in the future, we'll all be able to just pull off rubber faces that we used as disguises, so it won't be that special anymore.
It was a little ridiculous.
That's the twist in every one of them.
All right, we're going to take ourselves a break. T.
Yes.
I'll tell you what. You got a bomb to drop. You got some news to talk
minor
about.
Relationship bombshell.
You also did some ring shopping.
Yes, and I'm passionate about this subject now.
All right. We'll hear your passion. Doug Benson going to hang
the
in with us.
Lordess of the rings.
And J.J. Abrams coming up, too. Do all that next on The Adam Carolla Show.
It's The Adam Carolla Show. And now a word from the guy who signs our tiny checks, Program Director Jack Silver.
Check, check, check. You can stand under my umbrella, peeps. Today, the producer of Cloverfield and Lost, J.J. Abrams. From The Simpsons, comedian Dana Gould will help us break down another episode of Hugh Hauser. Recaps of American Idol, the Ace Man's trip to Phoenix, Teresa's search for a wedding ring, and a special report on the world's thinnest laptop. Hey, world's thinnest laptop. Good name for TSV.
Thank you, Jack. 866-901-ADAM. It's The Adam Carolla Show.
Comedian Doug Benson in studio from one of my favorite Guilty Pleasures, Best Week Ever, and many other shows. Doug is going to be at a head shop in Tarzana coming up this weekend. Doug's going to be at Laughs Comedy Spot in Seattle this Friday and Saturday. All right, J.J. Abrams is coming up in about 10 minutes from Cloverfield. T?
Yeah.
Let's talk ring shopping.
Okay.
And you had a breakthrough.
Yeah. I don't know what to say first. I'll start with the good and then to the bad.
All right.
Okay. The good thing is we went ring shopping. And now, you remember how we were talking about there should be the Prius of rings?
Mm-hmm.
Imagine if a Prius drove like a Ferrari.
Let me explain that to Doug Benson. I was saying, Doug, a couple of days back, women get judged by their rings, how big the rock is on their finger. And if you're walking around with someone who has a, you know, pinprick-sized stone on their finger, people go, oh, I see. She just married a civilian, or the guy's not doing that good, or she's not doing that good. And then when you see Slavonka Trump walking around where she has to drag her left hand around
it's
because it's too heavy, you yeah. think, oh, she's rich. And I said, yeah, you do that with a car. When a guy pulls up in a crappy, beat-up old Honda with Bondo all over it, you go, I guess his business isn't going that well. When a guy pulls up in a Ferrari, you go, I guess this guy's on top of his game. But I said the Prius worked out nicely because the Prius is a $30,000 car that school teachers drive, but it's also a $30,000 car that Leonardo DiCaprio drives. So it's a nice middle point. We need a Prius of rings, in other words. What is the Prius of rings?
Well, I looked into it, and first of all, I had no idea that diamond mining was, one, so cruel. And I knew it caused conflicts and wars and there were human rights abuses, but I had no idea there were little kids mining diamonds at gunpoint. Beyond that, it destroys ecosystems where they're mining.
Mm-hmm.
And beyond all of that, and if I get run off the road Silkwood style by someone from De Beers, you'll know why. The scarcity of diamonds is an illusion created by De Beers. A diamond is actually, at best, a semi-precious rock. It's basically a valueless hunk of stone that De Beers has made men think they have to buy to show us that we're loved. And the bigger the rock, the more you love us.
And the more you learn about De Beers, the more they become one of those 80s villains from a Mel Gibson movie. The guy from South Africa.
Yes.
He's nicely dressed, well coiffed, but he will kill you in a heartbeat. Yes.
Because he has diplomatic immunity.
Yes.
That's right.
So now,
and he says things like, it would be a shame if something
happened to you. And if it happened to me. Well, you know, De Beers had this problem. All these diamond mines sprouted up, and they realized that their commodity was not scarce.
Right.
So they basically, you know, started a cartel to fix the price. And then they had to convince everyone in America that diamonds were valuable. So they gave them for free to all the movie stars. And then they started this very effective ad campaign that diamonds should be your engagement ring. And mm-hmm. that diamonds are forever. And that diamonds are a girl's best friend.
And thank God. See, they had their, if it were guys, they would have had their work cut out for them. Because guys wouldn't have bitten on this. They would have went, look, we're very pragmatic. We see something the size of a pea, and then we go look at a big screen plasma, and we go, these things are both the same price. Which one do you want to take home? And we make our decision hands down. Even if we have a big screen at home already, I'll bring another one home and put it in the rumpus room. That's the way guys work. But chicks, you're easy, and you compete with each other.
Oh,
and now we had
ridiculous.
To figure out who had the bigger falsely controlled subsidy.
Oh, it's and it's worth nothing. And I for anyone who has a diamond and loves it and it's sentimental, God bless you. And I don't mean to say anything bad about your personal diamond, but it's like now that I know this, I can't not know it.
Right.
And I feel so bad sometimes for a young couple where the guy can't really afford a big ring and he gets a little tiny diamond and all the woman's girlfriends say, show it to me. Then they have to fake
right.
enthusiasm for mm-hmm. the little chip of diamond.
Right.
So in 2004, they found a way to mass produce cultured diamonds.
Mm-hmm.
They're made in a lab where they replicate the conditions of a diamond mine, the atmospheric conditions. They are chemically and optically diamonds.
Now they have little black 9-year-olds that are barefoot with guys guys with AK-47s going, go, come on, get it from the kiln.
I'll chop off your arm if you don't bring out a diamond. No, they're just made in a lab, and they're so chemically, they are the exact duplicate of a diamond. In fact, the diamond industry makes them mark them, so a jeweler can only tell that they're cultured by the mark. And I decided I wanted a yellow diamond, a canary, because it seems less
mm-hmm.
gauche to have a big old rock. I don't know. For some reason, the yellow ones
yeah,
are pretty.
I dig them.
Now, a carat yellow diamond would be $20,000, and it would be very hard to find one that's perfect.
Right.
But a lab diamond, they're all perfect.
Mm-hmm. But here's the part you're not factoring in.
Yeah.
Our society. You can look around on eBay all night long and find a whole bunch of replica cars. This car is a 66 replica Ferrari GTO. It is exactly the same as the 66 Ferrari GTO, except for the real one is worth $17 million. And this one is $200,000, which is still expensive.
Yeah.
But it's not a GTO. And then when people come over and they see it, they go, oh my God, you have a Ferrari GTO, and you go, eh, it's a tribute car, and they go, oh.
I can't wait to tell people this was not a blood diamond. But the it blood, is a diamond.
But the blood is this. The blood comes from the wallet of the man who allegedly loves you. That's the.
I'm
that's
talking about
that's
the,
what
the
women
conflict.
Want. I know, but women want sacrifice.
I don't want that. You know what, you Adam? I know you'll back me up on this. They say diamonds are a girl's best friend, and guys are spending $10,000-$20,000. You know what a girl's best friend is? A down payment.
Yes.
Oh, I was going to get some vibrator.
Young married couples, they
cultured
spend some...
Cultured vibrator.
They created in the
blood
lab.
Blood vibrator.
It's just...
Worst porn I've ever seen.
Once a month. No, I mean, you'd spend, you know, all this money on a wedding and on a ring, and the ring essentially has no value while renting.
No, look, I agree. Young couples should not only save the money for the ring, but they should save the money from the wedding. A lot of people spend $25,000 on a wedding, and then they go back to their apartment.
I don't get this.
Well, how many times do I have to tell you? People are stupid. People are stupid, and somehow the powers that be do not want to educate the stupid people. Like, there was no class in high school where somebody said, look, most of you are stupid, and you're not going to Harvard. If you get yourself $10,000 scraped together, go get yourself a condo. Don't suck it up your nose and buy yourself a ring. Doug?
I agree.
Is this hitting home?
I know.
My niece just got married, and they did like a small, silly, Vegas Elvis wedding.
Yes.
You know, that didn't cost much money. And then when I said, where are you registered? They said, at the bank. Send us cash.
Smart. I love it.
So smart. Like, just get money from everybody.
I love to do that for a young couple, but I'll tell you what I don't like to do. Contribute to the honeymoon fund.
Oh,
I don't want to send them to Fiji. Unless if you can't afford Mexico or Hawaii, you shouldn't be going anywhere. That should all be going toward the condo. All right, we need to take ourselves a break. JJ Abrams from Cloverfield is coming up. Doug Benson hanging in with us. Hey, Doug.
Yes, sir.
You want to hang in? Because I know you saw Cloverfield.
To. Yeah, I'd love to hang out.
Yeah, hang out. Doug Benson in studio. J.J. Abrams, the creator, director. I don't know if he writes it or just directs it or creates it.
Producer.
Paul Bryan. Producer of Cloverfield. Up next.
Oh, my God. Bobby. It's a lot. Run.
Still filming?
Yeah. People are going to want to know how it all went down.
Now, the producer of Cloverfield and the creator of Lost, J.J. Abrams, on The Adam Carolla Show.
Doug Benson is hanging with us, comedian Doug Benson. J.J. Abrams, good to speak to you.
How's it going?
It's going well. Hold on, let me flop you over to this line. I hear it's better. J.J.?
Yes, sir.
Thank you. You're on with Doug Benson, Adam Carolla. That's Ma and Teresa Strasser.
Hey, J.J.
Hey, guys.
Hey, JJ, can I tell you a conversation I had last night with a friend of mine when I was explaining to him that we're going to go see Cloverfield this afternoon, that the entire crew, because JJ and company decided it'd be a good idea, are going to go down to the Arclight and watch the movie.
Nice.
I said, that means it's a good movie. That's confidence. You ever see those movie review shows where they go, this movie was not put out for review?
Doesn't that always make you suspicious?
Of course. It's like when someone says no comment.
It's the worst.
It means they're lying, or when someone won't take a polygraph or won't.
No, I'm dying for you to see the movie. You kidding me?
That means it's a good movie.
Well, I wish that you'd seen it before so we could talk about it and have the people listening not understand what we're talking about. But I can't wait for you to see it.
So, I saw it.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, I saw it last night.
And
my stomach still hurts
from laughing.
Yes, from all the hilarity. No, it's an amazing movie, but also maybe I sat too close to the screen because man, it's just really it shakes you up.
It's funny. I think about the movie about Cloverfield like a roller coaster. When you get on, there's that sign that says warning.
You can't get off.
Do not get on if you have these conditions. Like,
yeah,
it's sort
pregnant.
Of like, this movie is like, it is such, you're so right. It so rocks you, and it's so intense, and the camera work is so crazy, because the whole idea is take the kind of Godzilla-type monster movie and tell it through the point of view of, you know, a real-life situation, a camera, a video camera. it can really, you know, it can make you sick if you sit too close.
Yeah, maybe Dramamine at the snack bar?
yeah, one of those patches behind your ear.
Hey, J.J. Abrams, can I ask you this? I know we don't want to give away too much of the movie, but it is a creature, yes?
Yeah, it's a giant monster, and, people say Blair Witch meets Godzilla. That's not a bad description, actually.
And was this your idea, or did you just produce it?
Yeah, it was an idea that I had because I wanted to do a monster movie again, but I didn't want to do it the way I'd seen it done recently. I thought, well, how do you do it in a way that feels different and relevant and new? So the idea came to me to tell it, you know, as if it were from, you know, your perspective or my perspective. And you know, instead of, you know, when Godzilla is walking down the street and everyone's, like, running through the street, what does it look like from that guy's point of view?
Right.
Not the God's eye point of view. And so that was where the idea was born.
Hey, can I ask you about the name Cloverfield?
Yeah.
What is the significance of that?
Nothing. The truth is, I'm half joking, but the reality is, when we started making this movie, my whole thought was, let's surprise people. Let's not give out too much information. Like, a lot of times now you go to the theater and you see a teaser trailer and you already knew the movie was in production. You knew the story, you knew the people in it, you'd seen behind the scenes photos online or on TV, and the surprise is gone. And I thought, if we're able to do this, if Paramount lets us do this, let's put out a teaser trailer. Don't tell anyone about this movie. So we literally went to this kind of shell company within Paramount. We did the movie so secretly within the studio that we used this company that was called Cloverfield within the company to make this movie.
Mm-hmm.
We kept calling the movie Cloverfield, and it became the name of the movie over the course of time. But it literally just started out as the secrecy of the movie, and it just became the title.
Well, J.J. Abrams, that same logic is not going to carry over into your next project, Star Trek.
Yeah.
Because people are well aware of that. Are you working on that currently?
Yeah, we're shooting right now.
And how much pressure do you feel from all the crazed Star Trek fans? And what would you like to say to Shatner, who's PO'd that he's not starring in it? What a blowhard. Come on.
Jesus, that's like Christ. When Adam West was like, how come I'm not in the Batman movie? You know, it's ridiculous.
The moon, he weighs 300 pounds.
No, come on. No, Shatner, he's like an icon. He's an amazing guy. I desperately wanted to put him in the movie. We're putting Leonard Nimoy in. The truth is the fact is that Shatner died. His character died in the movie. I mean, he shot the scene in a movie where Kirk dies.
Right.
So if I put him in, you know, it would feel like we're.
It's going to ruin the reality of space travel in the future.
Yeah, there you go. I mean, come on. I just think it was tricky. But the fact is that this movie, I was never the kind of Star Trek fan that I knew. Like, I knew people who were just insane about it. And for me, I certainly liked it, but it was never something that I felt like, you know, like The Twilight Zone was my show. You know what
right.
I mean? Like, I don't know. And I think the reason I'm doing this movie is the script was great, and you don't have to know a thing about Star Trek to see this movie and get on board and love the character. So we're making it for the fans on the one hand, but the truth is, we're making this movie. I'm making this movie for people who don't know a thing about Star Trek.
You want it to stand alone, and it seems like that's the trend. I mean, if you saw the last James Bond movie,
that's right.
You'd never heard of James Bond, it just would have been a good spy thriller.
Exactly. That's right. Exactly.
All right, so Cloverfield comes out this Friday, correct?
Yes, Friday. That's right.
I'm going to go see it today.
As will I.
As well, Teresa and the rest of the crew.
Right on.
You want to see it again, Doug Benson?
Oh, God, I'd love to.
You sit in the back.
I'd like to try again. I was also a little hungover. That's not a bad time.
You gotta see it. You gotta sit, you know, middle of the theater, a little bit farther back. Don't be hungover. Bring a bag just in case.
Bring a bag.
Hey, J.J. Abrams, can I pitch you a quick movie? Which
would you
could,
mind?
Could
no,
be
no,
your
I,
ne-
I was hoping you would.
Could be your next project?
Yeah.
All right. This is... Well, here's the title. The title says it all. It's not ambiguous like Cloverfield. This one is called Navageddon. Now, you seen that commercial for the Lexus that parks itself?
Yeah.
And every car these days has a navigational system in it, right?
That's right.
Well, 10 years from now, not only is every car sold going to have the navigation system in it, but it's also going to have the park yourself thing. And when those things get combined with the evil satellite,
yeah,
people are going to get in their cars, the doors are going to lock automatically, and it's just going to start driving. You will be a hostage inside your own vehicle. Now, some evil scientist has gotten hold of the satellite, the OnStar satellite. That's right, that used to help mankind. Now it's here to lock your doors and punish you, and has everyone in America heading toward the Grand Canyon. And there's not a damn thing we could do about it, except there's one guy. Maybe Kurt Russell. Who else would be good?
Shatner's free.
Shatner. Shatner plays an old army veteran who drives around a Willys Jeep and refuses to join all of us with our newfangled cars. And he's a scientist as well. And he works in the space program. And he's the only guy left who can go up there and do battle with the evil satellite that's now taking the entire world's population and driving it into the Grand Canyon.
JJ, you with us?
Sold.
Just Navageddon enough.
Come on, all you have to say is Navageddon, it's done.
You did Armageddon, right? You wrote that?
Yeah, I was one of the 14 writers or something on that movie.
You weren't the guy who wrote the scene when they were pulling apart the lunar shuttle and Bruce Willis pulled out a stick with wires hanging from it and yelled, "Who needs a short shift in one of these babes?" That wasn't your line, was it?
I had nothing to do with it.
Oh,
okay. Gotta get
going, you guys. Uh-oh. His publicist is yelling at him. All right.
Mommy was listening on the other line.
Not talking about Cloverfield anymore. He's got to go.
J.J. Yeah. Abrams, we will be watching.
You hang up that phone
right now. We'll be watching in about 5 hours. And then heaping praise in about 24 hours.
Well, I hope you guys like it, and thanks again for your support. And your show's awesome.
Thanks, JJ. We'll see you in person soon. Let me say this: as I was saying to the same friend about the strategy and about the sort of diabolical strategy of showing people your product. You exude confidence. It's like, everyone, look at this, versus we're not going to release this to the public or to the folks that do the movie critiquing. Number one. Number two, I said, once in a while you go out to eat and you sit down at the table and you're looking at the wine list or whatever, and all of a sudden, pow, some food shows up. And you're like, whoa, we didn't order after that. And they go, this is a gift from the chef. He just whipped this up. He thought you guys would, whatever. You gobble it down. It could be shrimp stuffed in crab, stuffed into a lobster, and you could be allergic to seafood, and you'd be like, give me that. It's free. I'm taking it down. And then when you put it down, you always go, wow, that's awesome. That is awesome. But really what's awesome is the guy gave it to you for free, and he did it sort of gratis. He just like, here you go, my friend, take this free. Now, I would argue that if you ordered the same appetizer for $13 and ate it, you'd be going, crab cake's a little dry. A little bit dry. But you get it for free, boom, you put it down, you have a smile on your face,
yeah,
right?
And I'm so flattered that he invited all the Adam Carolla cast and crew. I'm going to love this movie.
Right. Doug?
You don't have to love it.
Doug,
I love it publicly.
It got borderline uncomfortable for a second there when J.J. Abrams said, what'd you think, Doug Benson?
Oh, and
you're
like, I couldn't believe that.
But that's the thing. He is confident.
He
wasn't worried about what I was going to say.
No.
We were.
I'm not going to take down the great J.J. Abrams.
I'll go home and get your f***ing shine box.
Jealous, stoned, or both? Doug Benson, everybody.
If they show that movie in IMAX theaters, people will never stop throwing up.
Really?
They'll spend the rest of their lives vomiting.
You tell me you're going to put a nurse stationed at the top of the aisle, and I'm there. Doug Benson, everyone. Laughs Comedy Spot, Seattle, Washington, this Friday and Saturday. Laughscomedy.com is where you go. Tease the news.
Well, first of all, you should go see Doug if you're in the area. He's very funny live. Secondly, you gotta hear Diane Keaton on Good Morning America dropping the F-bomb.
Wow.
Nice. Yeah.
All right. Well,
I love it.
Look forward to that. She's getting nutty, right?
I think so.
Yeah.
Quirky.
Are all women over 55 with hair longer than their shoulders insane?
You know something's got to give.
Something's got to give.
He gave.
We'll take a break. We'll be back with the news next.
last night's season 7 premiere of American Idol.
I actually kind of like that, dog.
Comedian Dana Gould will be in studio.
This is amazing.
And he's going to help us break down another episode of PBS's Kuhlhauser.
This is amazing.
Teresa Strasser delivers the news.
We care about people. We're insightful.
And we'll talk to you at 866-901-ADAM. We're live from sea to shining sea and inside your computer at adamcarolla.com. This is the Adam Carolla Show.
All right. He's got the news teed up, but hold on. Becky's on the phone. Becky?
Hey.
What's happening?
Saw you in a new Taco Bell commercial. Mm-hmm. Was a little disappointed that they give you an unlimited supply of free tacos or something. Can't refuse.
Oh, you mean that I did a Taco Bell commercial?
I think Becky's calling you a sellout.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, a little of both. It wasn't very funny, and also the Taco Bell myth wasn't, you know, it's like you tried to beat the little Taco Bell dog and it didn't work out for you. I don't know.
Oh, well, I did it for the money. I mean, although I don't mind Taco Bell, but even if I hated Taco Bell, I would still take the tremendous amount of money they gave me to do the commercials.
Pay a lot of money for a day or two of work.
Yes. Now, let me explain how stuff works. First off, I got in this business to make money. I like doing the radio. I like speaking my mind, but you want to pay me a bunch of money for a day's work, I will definitely be there. Number one. Number two, the reason why these commercials never come out very good, and they always say they're going to come out very good, is because there's a bunch of corporate guys. It's this story. It's as old as time. Everyone wants to make a really funny commercial, and then you go do a bunch of really funny takes, but they never use those. They use the one that's scripted, and it goes all the way through the corporate whatever, and it comes out crappy. I've done this 1,000 times. It works this way 1,000 times. I could do a funny commercial. They won't let you do a funny commercial. They say they want you to do a funny commercial. But by the time the corporate guys from someone's always based in Austin, Texas or something, by the time those wieners get involved with it and go back and forth with the agency that does doing the commercial and all that kind of stuff, it always just comes out like crap. So you get a crappy commercial, you make some good money, and it goes away in a few months. And the money sits in your bank account for another 5 years. That's basically the way it is. Yeah, it's a sellout. It's absolutely a sellout. As a matter of fact, that's the only reason you're doing it.
Isn't every job kind of a sellout unless you're a novelist?
Well, I mean, it just depends. There's sellout and there's sellout. Look, you could argue that when Nick Cage does a crappy movie, he's a sellout. He's taking a payday to do Ghost Rider 2. Or whatever the hell he's doing. You know what I'm saying?
Listen, now, Becky, Adam needs to feed his kids. And by kids,
I mean Lamborghinis. Becky?
I need to feed them tacos.
Now, it was sweet vindication for me, who was turned down when I tried to get employment at the North Hollywood Taco Bell in 1980.
In your face.
Have you tried to take that test?
I did try to fill the paperwork out, and evidently wasn't Taco Bell material when I was in the 10th grade. And now look at me, I'm making crappy Taco Bell commercials.
But you, of course, want to say that Taco Bell is an excellent fast food product. It's delicious.
I do like it. I eat, probably eaten 10,000 bean burritos over there in my life.
You and Brittany.
All right, Becky, good times, baby girl.
All right.
Now, T.
Yes.
The news.
Teresa Strasser with tomorrow's news today.
Mitt Romney, the former Massachusetts governor, won a commanding victory yesterday in the Republican primary held in Michigan. Here he is with one of his very dynamic victory speeches.
Tonight is a victory of optimism over Washington-style pessimism. Yeah!
Seattle, Washington, or does he mean District of Columbia?
I think District of Columbia.
Oh, okay. So
now, tonight,
make sense.
We are celebrating here in Michigan, I've got to tell you that. But
sounds like three people clapping.
Guess what they're doing in Washington? They're worrying.
Awful lot of honkies in here.
I've said on many occasions, I think I could win the presidency of the United States and never do anything except for repeat this one sentence. I am sending a message to the fat cats in Washington. And people go like, what are you going to do about the economy? I'll tell you what I'm. You want to know what I'm going to do? I'm going to send a message to the fat cats in Washington. What are you going to do about illegal immigration? I will be sending a clear and direct message
to the
war. The war? Why? In Iraq?
Yeah.
I got a message for the fat cats in Washington. And they're not going to want to hear it either. I'll throw it, you know, I'll go ahead and put some parsley by the side of it every once in a while. But I will just repeat that general sentence, sending a message to the fat cats. Politicians, the only people worse on their own are probably radio DJs. I was going to say, every politician hates every other politician. And all you guys who are all part of the machine just point at another part of the machine and criticize it. I'm not going to be like those guys. Really? Isn't everyone in Washington just a bunch of yous from other places that are now in Washington? Like I said, the only people that hates their own more are on-air personalities.
Sad story out of Hollywood, Adam. I don't know if you remember a child actor named Brad Renfro. He was a very, at one time, promising actor who went on to develop a pretty long rap sheet. He was found dead in his Los Angeles home yesterday morning at 25.
I can't stop picturing Edward Furlong.
I know, me too. I don't know why, but you know him from The Client. He was 12 in that movie, which came out in 94, starring Tommy Lee Jones and Susan Sarandon. He was in the movie Sleepers, Apt Pupil, and 2001's Ghost World.
That was before Tommy Lee's face turned into an old vagina?
That was while it was turning into an old vagina, I think.
Okay.
He was pronounced dead by paramedics at 9 a.m. after some friends who'd spent the previous night with Renfro called 911. No word yet on cause of death. Renfro was drinking alcohol the previous night, and we know he had a history of drug problems.
Mm.
No word if either played a part in his death. An autopsy will be done sometime today. Now, Drew Pinsky, your former partner, has been speaking out about the drug use in young Hollywood, mm-hmm. and that it is not a joke. He went on Ellen's show yesterday, and here's what he had to say about Britney Spears.
We're watching somebody who's following the Anna Nicole Smith blueprint to the letter. I mean, mm-hmm. she's, you know, keeping people around her that allow her to keep using, that support her denial. She leaves the country like Anna Nicole does. She keeps using. She doesn't follow directions of people. And the reality is, in this state, and really in any state, you can use drugs and alcohol until you die. You're allowed to do that. You also can only be held against your will for very short periods of time. And if you refuse to follow up and take treatment, you're within your rights to do that, even if it's killing you. In this case, this is a serious medical problem. This is a young lady. I mean, look at this picture here. She is dying in front of our eyes. She needs physician care regularly for a sustained period of time. If I were to treat her, I'd put her in 4 to 6 weeks of an intensive program in a psychiatric hospital and then a year of a residential program.
Ellen's like, yeah, that's unfortunate, except for I only care about lap dogs. I don't care about human beings. Now, if you're talking about a Shih Tzu that was dying because right. it was strung out on heroin, now we have a situation. Right.
Well, Dr. Drew went on to explain.
Whose hair shorter, Ellen's or Dr. Drew's?
They have the same haircut in a way.
They would make an awesome lesbian couple.
They really would. They do look a little bit alike.
Yeah, nice looking lesbian couple.
One cares about people, one about dogs.
That's right. They've covered the planet.
Well, Dr. Drew explained why he thinks Britney is really in trouble. There's one very, very bad sign.
When people come into my program, my Day and Out Life is in a psychiatric hospital. In my program, when people come in and they believe they're going to die, they really believe that, I know they're ready to get well. The other thing short of that that I've seen motivate people to get well is when they lose their kids. Mm-hmm. That usually will motivate particularly women to change.
Mm-hmm.
In this case, it doesn't seem to be getting through to her, which is a horrible sign. It's a really bad sign.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the fact that she doesn't seem to want her kids back or can't get it together enough to show up for these hearings or to follow any of the rules she's been given, he says, obviously, that's a sign.
Ellen was thinking, now what if your kids were allergic to your cat, so you had to give them to your hairdresser?
The kids.
And then the place you rented the kids from took the... Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think she recognizes human beings. I would hate to work for her.
Apparently, it's not that fun.
Mm-hmm.
Although, I'm sure some people really like it.
No. I watch people on TV all the time and go, couldn't work for that person. I've worked with a lot of those people. And have said, I couldn't imagine working under this person. I'm next to them and I'm miserable. All right, T.
Diane Keaton has had a very fun couple days. She's promoting this movie, Mad Money.
Mm-hmm.
Yesterday, she talked about having stolen some belts from Bloomingdale's.
Oh, I was thinking of Diane Cannon for some reason when you were talking about Diane Keaton.
She has the crazy long hair. Diane Keaton has shoulder-length hair, but there's an eccentricity about her. She was Annie Hall.
Screw her. I'm mad at her.
Keaton?
Yes.
Why?
She restores homes.
Yeah.
She's into, yeah.
Into architecture.
I know. All these pussy posers are into architecture, which means they're into making money and walking in and pointing at a lot of stuff and thumbing through Architectural Digest. They don't roll their sleeves up and do anything, I'm sure. But she restored a Mediterranean Spanish-style 20s Hollywood house. And I knew somebody who I was working with who knew her, and we're both renovating our houses at the same time. And I said, wow, I saw some article in the magazine or something about it. And I said, wow, I'd really like to check her house out and see if I can get some tips for my house. And then we could just talk about our love of restoration and architecture. And she gave me the high hard one.
I'm surprised.
It was like, I said to the person, well, ask her if I can come by, you know, when it's convenient for her and give me a little tour of the house and take a look around. And she was like, yeah, you got to talk to her publicist.
F her.
That's what I say. F you.
Do you want to hear her drop the F bomb?
Yes.
Okay, well, she's been talking recently about when she was broke, stealing belts from Bloomingdale's and then feeling so bad she mailed them back. Well, then she corrected the story saying, she mailed them back after about a year of wearing them. So she went on Good Morning America, and Diane Sawyer was trying to talk about that, and Diane Keaton was giving Diane Sawyer some compliments. Now, this is Good Morning America. This is network morning TV. You're eating your cereal. Your kids are watching. And it's not Diane Cannon with the crazy blonde hair that goes to the Laker games. It's Keaton of Annie Hall fame. Here she is on GMA.
You are a beautiful woman. And I am not kidding you for one minute. And how that
You're
has...
just trying to keep
no,
me from
I'm
testifying
not.
At the trial for that Bloomingdale's thing.
No.
And let me tell you, corrupting a witness is also a crime. All right, I have to ask you about something.
Those lips. I mean, I love them. I'd like to have lips like that. Then I wouldn't have worked on my... personality, or my excuse me, my personality. If I had lips like yours, I'd be better
also
off.
Also a crime.
My life would be better. I'd be married.
Yeah.
One F-bomb only, though.
Yeah, she dropped one F-bomb.
Now, do they get that out? Are they on a delay?
She got a PG-13 rating for it.
Yeah, old well, joke, but yes. Is this movie going to be better or worse than Because I Said So?
Let's put it this way. It's got Queen Latifah. Her batting average is a little dodgy.
Yes.
And
she's one of those chicks who got her Oscar and said, F it, I'm not trying anymore.
I thought As Good As It Gets. Was that the one with Jack Nicholson?
Yeah, but Queen Latifah won her Oscar.
For Chicago?
For Chicago, like 2.5 years ago.
Yeah.
And it would be the equivalent, it'd be like the sports equivalent to you going, I won the Super Bowl, and then the next season's going, where's Tom Brady? He's like, he's drinking a beer. Well, he should be playing. I'm cool. I just want a paycheck. Like, every single movie she's made after that has just been disastrous, right?
Yes. And the third lead is Katie Holmes. So you made an excellent point yesterday, which I thought about later. You said a really superb actor or actress has to have a kind of intelligence, and that you don't think Katie has that.
Right. I don't. I think she's vapid and vacuous. I think there's a veneer, attractive veneer on her, and there's nothing else going on inside of her, which is fine. I mean, she's an attractive, nice person, which is more than most people are. But you can't fill up an 80-foot screen with that. You can fill up a 13-inch screen with that on Dawson's Creek, but you can't fill it up. Somehow you'll see through that when you get that big. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And there's nothing in her soul. So she just becomes an actress, but she doesn't exude anything.
Well, two celebrities may be becoming daddies.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the news. Matthew McConaughey.
And Ellen.
Matthew McConaughey is going to be a dad. This according to TMZ. He's announced that his girlfriend, believe she's a model.
Shocking.
Is pregnant with his child.
Mm-hmm.
I think he wrote on his personal website, my girlfriend Camilla and I made a baby together. It's 3 months growing in her womb and all looks healthy and lively so far.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's another very simple guy, but every part he plays is the guy, And have you seen the commercial for the new movie coming out with Goldie Hawn's kid and him?
Yeah.
He's in his underpants the entire commercial, like he never has a shirt on.
Saw the trailer, and about 15 seconds into it, she whacks him in the head with an oar.
Yes.
So for my girlfriend, I'm like, Adam has this theory.
I have my 9-second rule, and I saw that too. Start counting when you see the latest Martin Lawrence effort,
yeah,
or when you see the latest McConaughey effort, or any comedy. Start counting when the commercial starts. If you get to head trauma inside of 10 seconds,
yes,
it's a crappy comedy.
Hitch was a great example of this.
Every single one of them. What's that?
Hitch, remember?
Hitch was
in the head,
nonstop head trauma.
Love that movie.
Now, there used to be groin trauma.
Yeah.
It has gone to head trauma.
What's next?
I miss the old, I'm old-fashioned. I like a knee to the nuts.
Well,
that's just me. That's the way my grandfather did it, and his grandfather before that.
It's hard to adjust.
When the great Giacomo Carolla came over on the, what's the name of that ship? Andrea Doria?
Yeah.
Before it sank.
It sank.
Yeah. when he was making comedies back in the heyday, he said a knee to the nads. That's
a smile.
That's
the way you do it.
Yeah, now it's all head trauma. But he's in his underpants getting hit in the head the entire time. He's a nice guy, but another
lightweight,
simple guy. Yes.
His girlfriend is indeed a 24-year-old Brazilian model. And also, TMZ has learned that a 22-year-old Playboy playmate is claiming David Spade is the father of her unborn child.
David Spade is the poster boy for guys who get upset at guys who get laid who we don't want to get laid.
You're mad at him for getting laid?
Yeah. Bald Brian, please back me up on this one. When you hear that George Clooney's a ladies' man, you're like, all right.
I can see it.
I could see it.
Yeah.
And when you hear about McConaughey or whoever, Sean Connery or whatever,
sure,
you just go, all right.
Guy's guy.
And then you realize David Spade quietly gets more tail than all those guys combined and has been happily effing his way through Hollywood for the last 15 years. And you get angry.
Worse than Mario Lopez. I felt similarly when I found out that AC Slater was the biggest whore in Hollywood.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. David Spade has nailed almost every hot blonde in Hollywood and continues. And if this chick is blonde and she's young, he's been on top of her.
Her name's Jillian Grace. She was Miss March 2005. And Spade has said, I had a brief relationship with Jillian Grace. If it is true that I am the father of her child, then I will accept responsibility. So not denying.
All right.
So more will be revealed on that. And, of course, last night was the big premiere of American Idol Season 7. We will get into that later. For now, I'm Teresa Strasser. That's the news.
Tomorrow's news. Today, Teresa Strasser. You, CNN.
Man, I'll tell you what I'm looking forward to. Dana Gould coming in here and gang-banging Huelhauser with me. He does a great...
Are you all having as much fun as we are learning about this kind of stuff?
He channels Huel, but a super fruity Huel.
Which is a super fruity Huel.
Which sounds like the world's worst smoothie. What a super... super fruity Huel.
I'd like that with an incompetence boost.
Nice job. We'll take ourselves a break. When we come back, though, American Idol recap. I tuned in to the very middle of the show... caught the super insane chick who should be institutionalized and thought, this is why I hate it. I also, this morning in the wee hours, and Bald Brian, you're not going to like this one, but in the wee hours this morning, I had a revelation. I had a thought about the American Idol program. I had a thought between the people that like it early and the people that like it late. I will share that very poignant, powerful thought with you next.
It's the Adam Carolla Show, where right now we're going to break down the game film from last night's premiere of American Idol.
Peace, love, and chicken grease.
Yeah, dog. It's the Adam Carolla Show.
Randy even effed that one up.
Isn't it love, peace, and chicken grease?
The idea is that chicken grease rhymes with peace. You go peace and chicken grease. You don't go peace, love, and chicken grease, dog. Oh, never have so few been paid so much for so little.
Yeah.
Paula Abdul, zero in the talk department. Randy, a little bit less than that. And Simon, well, he's a 4.5, but he's a 9.5 because he's bookended between the knobs. It's so relative. I'm so jealous. All right. In Seacrest, I was yelling at the TV set yesterday where my wife said, hey, you know, these people screwing up could be funny. I said, you know what would be funny? If Seacrest was funny. Seacrest should be interviewing these guys and busting their chops out in the hallway. Thus, that would be very funny. But no, he's not either. He's just a mic stand with caps. All right.
And highlights.
Oh, yes, you're right. I was not fair to him.
You said you had a point that there are two kinds of people. There are the people who love when it's whittled down to the excellent singers, and then there are people who love the first few weeks of awful singers.
Yes, and it is so powerful that I'm going to save it for the end of the segment.
Oh.
But it will okay. It will be eye-opening.
Okay, well, I'll say this briefly before we hear Alexis Cohn, who sort of stole the night last night of the auditions in Philadelphia. I could not help feeling like this was a parade of borderline or just flat-out mentally ill teenagers.
Oh, wow. This is the first I've heard of this.
It was worse than ever.
I've been screaming
sad.
It for 5 years, and those of you who take pleasure in watching people with disabilities flail are bad people.
These were clearly disabled teenagers and youngsters.
Yes, and play her drop.
Yeah. Here is... And she was just one of many.
Of course.
Possibly one of the most extreme, but there were many like her. Her name's Alexis Cohn. She's 23. She's from Allentown. She lives in a studio.
I have an awesome idea for a show. America would love. Paul Bryan, you'd love this.
What?
Let's get mentally disabled people to attempt to pilot light aircraft.
Yes.
And then we can watch them just crash in the side of a mountain and laugh our asses off.
How about, are you smarter than a retard?
That guy's retarded. I asked him what 2 + 2 was, and he started picking his nose. Awesome.
How about kick the foster child?
Yeah.
Huh?
Take it.
Same thing.
All right. What do we got?
Okay. Alexis Cohn lives in a studio. That's one room with her mom. She's apparently studying to be a veterinarian, although later she talks about perhaps actressing.
Yes. And her crazy mom.
And her crazy mom. Now, here she is being introduced to the judges.
Hello.
Peace.
Peace be with you.
Peace, Alexis.
Definitely.
So your name is Alexis Cohn, and how old are you?
23.
So who have you been compared to vocally? Anybody?
Janis Joplin.
Wow.
Grace Slick, and also Pat Benatar.
Here's what makes me mad. It would make you mad if they actually did this, like if Randy Jackson went, hey, Peace, how old are you? That'll be $36,000, because that's equivalent per syllable. That's my rate on this show. All right. Peace, dog. Peace.
Well, you're sort of wondering, Alexis, she's covered in glitter and she's kind of got a funky style. Obviously, she's maybe a hair off, but I was still not sure whether or not she could sing.
When the truth is found to be. And all the joy within you dies. Don't you want somebody to love? Don't you need somebody to love? Wouldn't you love somebody to love? You better find somebody to love. When the curtains fall.
Jesus. Ashley Simpson's at home going, damn, that girl's got pipes.
I didn't think she was that bad.
No, look, the reality is probably about the same as Grace Slick, the person who sung that song.
Yeah, she's not, Grace Slick, not a great singer.
No, but personality.
Here is Alexis being judged.
It was all a bit possessed for me, you know.
Possessed?
That, you know, like she's channeling the voices.
dog.
Channeling the 70s, 60s, 70s.
I don't think this is the route for you, sweetheart. I think you'll either end up as a country vet and be quite normal, or you might end up in a band.
I've never really been able to work with professional people. I was a bit scared.
Ready, yes or no?
No, not good enough for the show, but I like the kind of 60s cover band. Do a Jefferson Airplane cover band.
Paula?
I'm going to have to pass.
Sorry, sweetheart.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you for your talent.
I'm sorry I couldn't do it.
It happens.
You're talented. You're very talented.
Peace, love, and chicken grease, man.
Man.
He did throw in one good looking out.
Good looking out, guy, dude, bro, man. Yeah, have a vagina. Yeah, okay,
still,
dude.
I don't have anything else in my repertoire.
Peace. Love and Chicken Grease and no S, Dick Tracy.
Well, she was obviously sent home, after which she got very indignant and angry. She wasn't the only one. There were many people who left there indignant and angry. Now, here was a kid. He's Egyptian, foreign, obviously.
Well, hold on. Yeah. I'm not done with Alexis.
Okay.
I saw the whole Lexus thing. What I did is I plopped down on the sofa right in the middle of the show, and my ass hit the sofa, and she was the first face I saw.
Right.
And then I saw her get interviewed, and then I saw her crazy mom get interviewed, yeah. And then I saw their crazy, crappy one-bedroom apartment.
With the cats and the dog.
And I said, yes, this is sad, and we're laughing at the misery of others, and... Let me explain something.
They didn't kick her door down and bring the cameras into her apartment.
No,
yeah,
look.
But she doesn't understand.
Look, so we should put retarded people in porn. Hey, man, they didn't have to take their special pants off.
They
willingly did it for a lollipop and a shiny new nickel.
The girl clearly has either juvenile onset schizophrenia or some kind of mania.
Right. Now,
she doesn't know what's happening.
She's going to come to Hollywood. She will work at the Starbucks for a few years, and then she'll kill herself. That's basically what her path is going to be. No actressing. No, we are laughing at the misery of others. And let me say this. If that's what you need to make yourself feel better about you, you are in bad shape. Your success and the way you feel shouldn't be relative to others. It should be based on your own scale.
You're talking about Schadenfreude, happiness at other people's pain.
Right. It's like saying, I'm smart because everyone around me is stupid.
Yeah.
No, you should judge yourself in a bubble. Just because you got into an elevator with a bunch of Raiders fans doesn't make you a genius. Because as soon as the door opens, you're a retard again. Thank you. We'll get into my theory in a second. Paul Bryan, this is not going to feel good.
Oh. Well, it didn't feel good for a young man. Allah. He had a couple different names. He was from Egypt, and here he is meeting the judges.
Okay, your name is?
Ali.
Ali.
Yeah, no, Ali.
Ali.
Yes, that's good.
Ali.
Ali. Yes.
Ali.
Yes. My nickname, Yuka, I like to call me Yuka.
It's Yuka?
Because everybody in Hoboken, he knows me.
Ali.
Yuka.
Ali. Ali, you come.
Yeah, no. My nickname,
Ali.
Yuka.
Paul is trying to ask for more Diet Coke.
Okay.
That's the sad part.
Okay.
Okay. And you like Paula, it says here.
Yeah, because she's a good singer. She's had a pretty, like,
the butterfly
voice.
Net. Good
like
singer.
Her because she dances good. And, yes.
Yes.
But maybe he's a good singer.
So the Jews are the real.
Why isn't that a new show? Throw the Jew down the well.
I would like to take Paula back to my home and perform female circumcision on her, beat crap out of her, to put a bag over her head and take many other lovers.
Her last name is Abdul.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Although I believe she is a Jew.
Mm.
Confusing for Borat's junk.
Right. All right.
Well, is this guy a good singer? I mean, you can't tell.
No.
And you come to me in the summer breeze. Keep me warm in your love and softly. And it's me you need to show. How deep is your love? Is your love how deep?
Thank you.
Okay.
And he's going to Hollywood. No, I'm kidding.
No.
No. No, that was interesting because it was Shame the Foreigner and the probably mentally ill young man in one.
Yes, yes. You tell me when you get to the end of your clips and I will launch on my theory.
I'll do one more.
Hey, Janet.
Yeah.
What's happening, baby girl?
Oh, my God. I just love your show. I think you're fabulous. I've seen you over the years and, you know, I haven't been like this huge, outrageous fan, but I just love every time I hear you talk. You make sense. You talk like people... like us out here, what we're all thinking.
Oh, really? Well, what, I kind of like that. On the other hand, that makes me one of you.
Well, yeah, that's a good thing.
Oh, it is. Okay. What do you do, Janet?
Huh?
What do you do?
I'm an office manager and a waitress.
Uh-oh. And where do you work, by the way? You want to give a plug to your restaurant?
I don't work at a restaurant right now. I do work for Altadena, though.
My dad worked in Altadena for many years at a place called 5 Acres. Foster. Foster care. Yeah, weird orphanage, essentially.
Yeah.
Freak out. Hey, Janet.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening.
Yes, listen, I want to tell you, that woman that called the other day, she kind of irritated me. The one that was all over T.
Jennifer.
The attorney.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I tell you, T, you've got it going on. And I know you know this. You don't need me to tell you. But it just kind of bothered me that this woman was nitpicking, splitting hairs about this. First of all, this is a show, and you two work together as a very good team. And I don't know where she was with this bashing Adam all over T. It's just ridiculous. Also, I want to say that, even I like your show the way it is, and I think you really should be alone. You don't need these Dannys. You don't need all these people, because you do a good job just the way you do it.
Well, thanks, Janet.
You're very welcome.
All right, Janet, Teresa, and Adam in the morning.
Yeah.
Good times.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate that.
All right, T, sorry, the last clip from American Idol.
And people say, I know you don't need to hear this. Wrong.
No, yeah. Listen, you have, in the compliment department, you're like a bottomless tumbler. There's not enough iced tea in the world to ever fill your tumbler. In the put-down department, you're like a thimble.
Don't even fill it half full.
That's right.
I can't hack it.
Yep.
Okay, I'll play you one more. Do you want to hear a really, really good guy or a really good girl?
Is it the hot chick?
Yeah.
Is it the hot country chick?
Yeah. Christy Lee Cook.
Christy Lee Cook, the one who's into like bareback riding and taekwondo.
And cage fighting.
And cage fighting and helping kids.
I wish I knew how to quit you.
Through the majesty of horse riding. Yeah.
Yes.
I was smitten immediately.
She was gorgeous. And here she is singing Amazing Grace.
How sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me. I once was lost, but now I'm found.
Good. Yeah, for those of you who didn't see it, picture 400-pound heavyset woman of color.
Right. That's Christy Lee Cook.
Yeah, she was hot, and I was thinking to myself, you know, a lot of people get caught up in the voice, and this person's not right. Well, look, I don't know. Does Faith Hill have the greatest voice in country music? She's hot. She can sing well enough.
It's a package.
And she can sell some things. Yeah, Shania Twain. There's a reason why these chicks wear tight outfits. Look, maybe her singing is a 7.5, but her looks are 9, and so be it.
It's the same with the guys. There was a guy, Chris Watson, who's 20. Gorgeous. Gorgeous. And yeah, he could sing. But it was the combination of the looks and the voice.
Right. All right. So now my theory that I came up with as I was pouring myself some coffee at 5 a.m. I thought, why do people or who? Because it really does seem split. You know, life is interesting. The things that feel right to you, you think are universal. When you taste something and it tastes really good, you tell your friends, oh, you would love this. You would love it. It's awesome. And then when they bite into it and they don't like it that much, you're confused. It's like, but I said it was awesome. I felt so strongly about this, and yet you're exactly the opposite. I seem to run into this a lot in my life. Bald Brian over here loves the beginning part and then tunes out.
Yeah.
Jimmy is exactly the same as Bald Brian. Aww. He likes the beginning part and then he tunes out. Teresa and I like the second part where you can pick a horse and watch that. And I learned, actually, and Bald Brian, you can punch this up on your mini porn box over there. But they said that the highest rated episodes from last season were the audition episodes.
That's why they stretch them out. People love it.
Right. To me, it's stretched out. It's like not even foreplay for 9 weeks and then the sexing begins. And I start thinking about, well, now why are we split as a nation and what's different about certain people than other people when it comes to this? And it's pretty much like this. Everybody you talk to about the beginning phase of American Idol says, I like to see the people screw up. I like to see the crazy people. I like to see the hacks. And it comes down to this, negative versus positive. I'm not the world's most positive guy, but I would rather root for someone to do well than pray for their failure. And I know this sounds convenient because I'm on the good side of this argument, or I've put myself on the good side of this argument. But so much of our culture, and especially lately, has taken a turn for the negative. We love to see these celebrities getting jacked up and falling over and getting DUIs. We love to have the embarrassing videos or photos come out from them. TMZ is making a nice living just finding people when they're not at their best, and oftentimes either under the influence of drugs or under, as the case in American Idol, under the influence of a brain that's probably not chemically balanced. And then we point and we laugh because it makes us feel better about our little lives. That's sad. I don't want to be that person. I really don't. I would rather root for somebody to win unless they're the Patriots, which case Tom Brady should break his leg the next time he steps out of his bed. Dear Bill Simmons Sports, dear online diary, I heard Ace talking smack about Tom. One M in time. Reverse. Go Pats! Now, I don't like rooting for people to fail, and I hate the idea of looking at... Look, I don't want to be a 200-pound guy. Nay, I don't want to be a 275-pound guy who looks at 310-pound guys and goes, look at fat ass. Look at Lardo. Sure, you look better standing next to him, but that don't make you thin. It doesn't make you have talent. It doesn't make you smart, and it doesn't make you happy. It just means there are people that are more effed up and dumber and worse off than you are.
Paul I'm with Bryan. You. I'm with you philosophically. Two things that may make you feel better about how I come out on this. One, I don't like to see the mental defectives and the people that are genuinely impaired do badly. I like to see people that are filled with delusional hubris.
It's the same
knock
thing.
Down a few pegs. It's not. It's I feel not like I'm always the same expense. Thing. Not laughing at someone's expense, laughing at someone who has been... The thing you talk about all the time, which I believe yes. very powerfully, which is you've been empowered falsely your whole life. Don't ever let anyone tell you you can't. You're the right. greatest, blah, blah, blah. Well, you're not the greatest, and it's time for you to learn that. And if it has to be on national TV, then so be it.
I agree. It's all... Look, we all love to see Tyra Banks up there. You know, we'd all love to see her slip when yeah. she was walking down the runway. Right. But she's rich and she's powerful and filled with the same hubris and sense of false entitlement mm-hmm. that we all see, except for these guys are coming from crappy one-bedroom apartments, and that's why I don't need to see them knocked down.
The underdog losing is not fun. The Patriots yeah. losing is fun.
Yes. Yes. Yes, exactly. Would be nice to see Tom Brady not get a fourth Super Bowl ring in 7 years because he's going to take his millions of dollars to Hawaii, go to the Pro Bowl, and then nail a supermodel. That's why I want him knocked off his perch. The guy living in the crappy one bedroom and sleeping on a futon, I agree, I hate his attitude and his sense of entitlement,
yeah.
but that's not based on anything.
Sure.
Okay.
One more real quick thing. If it was the last round, if it was all this, if it was all people singing great songs like Amazing Grace, I'd be in. I'd watch an hour of Amazing Grace by great singers, but I don't want to see Diane Warren week. I don't want to see people singing terrible
Diane
pop
Warren
songs.
Is a great songwriter.
Oh, stop it. Oh, stop.
She writes a hell of a song.
All right, you two lesbos, let's break this up. All right, so once again, if you like the beginning part of the show, you're evil, and if you like the end part, you're righteous and pure, like me and T.
Yeah.
That's what I figured out this morning at 5 a.m. T.
Yes.
You have a bombshell to drop.
Yeah,
do you
I, got
not?
A little, I got a little news. Got
bad
a little news.
News.
Yes. Well, shocking.
Well, I talked to producer Angie, and I was like, she's like, Teresa needs to bring up her bombshell. She needs to drop her bombshell.
I'm drunk.
I'm drunk.
And I said, what do you, I thought she already said that. And then she said, talking to the top of the lampshade, I can't hear you. So I had to talk down into the top part of the lampshade because she was sitting down. And she said, no, Teresa's got some news. And I said, well, should we get into it? And she said, she may cry. And I said, oh, well, that's good radio.
There's about a 34% chance.
All right. We'll keep our fingers crossed because this is one that Bryan and I both can agree on. We'll do that. Dana Gould coming in studio as well to do some Huell Hauser. Nothing better. We'll do that right after this.
I don't know who won. Let's see. Johnny Depp won Best Actor in Musical or Comedy. Daniel Day-Lewis, hold your applause, won for Best Actor in a Drama for... No, that's not right. He won for There Will Be Blood.
Yeah.
Javier Bardem won for No Country for Old Men. He won Best Supporting Actor.
Jeremy Piven won for Entourage.
Yeah, this is a lot of folks won.
Stay tuned for more How Bad Is Whoopi? Now back to the Adam Carolla Show.
Yeah, that's remember the part where I always scream they don't have to get there early for prep, or maybe they should start? Don't you read the effing card first? Okay, look. Here's all I'm saying. You know, it's funny, Dawson, I just ran into Dawson in the hall, and Dawson was like, dude, those Whoopi things,
yeah.
That's the easiest thing in the world. I just tune in any episode. I said, I know. I watch one view every 3 weeks. My wife TiVos them, and I just tune into random views. Like, hey, let's just check out Wednesday's view, and Whoopi Fs up before the show even starts.
So finding a clip of her effing up is finding a needle in a needle stack.
Right. Exactly what it is. All right, T.
Later, hosen.
Oh, I forgot. American Idol is a jugger.
Not.
Oh,
up top. Yeah. Not. All right. You want to try that, Bald Brian?
Here we go.
All right, here we go, T. You got to do it.
Okay. American Idol is a jugger.
Not. All right.
All right.
All right. We'll clean that up and we'll clean it up in post. Yeah. T.
Now I'm
what's
too
your
happy.
Bombshell? What's going on?
All right. Remember the ex, Brandon.
Mm-hmm. Now you had a situation with your ex that you were with him for a little while.
3 years we were together.
He's a strapping, tall, drink of water, and you said we should break up. We should separate.
Yeah, 3 month break.
3 month break, and then at the end of the 3 months, I will alert you via carrier pigeon, and you will come running back into my arms.
Oh yeah, I was convinced. That's
how you thought it was going to go. But in that 3 months, he had found another man. I mean, woman. I mean, not.
She's slightly masculine looking.
Found somebody else.
Yeah.
And then, as so often is the case, and this is how I know that people are horrible. You based most of your stuff on who else wants it and how much. Like, you know,
the value went up.
If you were going and looking at a car, like just a used car, and you went, yeah, I don't know, $18,000 is a lot of money to pay for a used Lexus. And then somebody ran up and said, I must have this car. You'd be like, out of the way, bitch.
Yeah.
This is my car.
Yeah.
And if you found out they drove it home, you'd drive home angry. God, what would have been? What? But the reality is just 5 minutes earlier, you didn't even really want it.
I know.
Someone else wanted your man, right. And you wanted him back.
Yeah, I wanted him back. And at 29, the biological clock was getting a little loud. And
yeah.
I really was like, that's the last chopper out. That's it.
That's right.
And I was crushed. And just as I was really crushed, I opened my MySpace. And this young lady has sent me a photo of herself licking his face.
Oh, crap!
And you had left, but everyone else was here, and I was a heap of tears.
That's why I was laughing, yeah. She licked his face.
Yeah, and she sent it to me.
Why did she send it to you?
I don't know. Here's what I want to think. I want to think that she's a good person who was just having a bad moment.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that he never told her that he was on a break with somebody else. I think he told her it was over.
You know what? That's true, because that's how my family is. Their bad moment was the 70s, and the lion's share of the 80s. But, you know, they had an 18-year bad run, but now
they're good people. They had a bad moment.
They had a bad decade and a half. That's all.
They were triggered by the decade.
Their bad moment was my formative year, so we didn't line up.
So be it.
All right, but what would she say? Because I always ask, that's the question I ask. If I pinned her down and said, why did you send this picture to Teresa's MySpace of you licking her ex-beau's face? What do you think she would say?
I think she felt a little threatened. And it was a little bit of step off.
Okay.
He's mine, and look at how obvious it is. I'm licking his face.
All right.
And that's fair.
All right.
Because I was saying publicly that I wanted him back.
Sure. Okay.
It was mean. It was a little bit mean.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe she was marking her territory with her tongue.
Right.
It hurt. It really hurt. It visceral. Because this was a guy I was with for 3 years, and he was, this sounds dumb, but he was close with my family, and my stepfather died, and so Batman will never meet my stepfather.
Mm-hmm.
That's the last guy who ever met him.
Well, maybe I'll see him in hell. All right.
So,
but you sent this guy packing for 90 days, so don't give me that crap about how much you were in love with him.
Oh, complete. I mean, yeah. By the way, if I'm being totally honest about it, when you take a break, at least I can speak for myself. Deep down, I think my mindset was. Makes me sound awful, but I think my mindset was, what if I find somebody better?
Sure.
I wasn't sold on him.
Of course
I
not.
I would never think that for a second about Batman. Never. I never have those kind of doubts. But I did.
Right. Given another 90 days. But everybody needs to do that. We live so much in the past. I mean, there's that sort of thing. Like, sometimes I do have those thoughts. And I don't know if you people have these thoughts where you go, damn, I got Tommy Lasorda in here a year ago telling me I could have played professional baseball. And I think, damn, I could have played professional baseball. And then I think, no, I would have done it if I was good enough to do it. I didn't need Tommy Lasorda to adopt me. You know, I would have done, you fill in the blank. You know, I think to myself, I could have been a good enough student to go to college instead of carpet cleaning. No, I wasn't. I wasn't. And I wasn't a good enough football player to play at the next level. Sure. I would have done it. I really do think about that all the time. I think, no, I got to think back to playing at Valley College and getting my ass kicked by bigger, faster guys. I wouldn't have made it.
That's exactly what I've had to do. And, you know, I had to think about times that were really bad with him and remind myself there was a reason I wasn't sure.
Even if the times were all salad days with him, you made a decision to break up with him for 90 days, and that's what you need to focus on. Yeah. You were not that into him.
I was not. Well, the MySpace thing happened. That really hurt. And the ending was just about the worst possible ending you could have, because I don't know how much of this we talked about on the air, but let's just talk about it now. Danny said something, and it was really a moment where I loved him, because he stuck up for me when she sent that stupid picture, and I got upset. And he basically jokingly threatened her. He said, wow.
That's a big bitch.
He said, yeah, he said, I saw her picture, and she wasn't pretty. Secretly loved that. And then he said, you know, stuff happens, and, you know, she works at a school, and I know how to find her. Anyway, he threatened her, and she went to the cops.
Uh-huh.
She went to the district attorney, and it was passed along to the anti-terrorism unit. Okay, now this girl, there were inches of transcripts of our show. She was taking down notes of every single thing we said for 4 hours a day and passing along to the police. This was scary and weird.
Mm-hmm.
So Danny had to go and meet with the DA. And that's,
thankfully, he was meeting with him over something else that day anyway.
And then Danny made this apology on the air.
Yeah, oh yeah, it was poignant. Yeah, but, you know, I did disagree with him on that point.
But what about when he said...
Cogent.
Yeah. And I mean, it was... Mm-hmm. Okay, he was out of line.
It takes a big, big man, as Danny pointed out, too.
Right.
Uh-huh.
But okay, I could get where she might have felt a
little
threatened.
Danny, that's enough Gretchen talk. Oh, we get it. You got a condo. Now that's enough. We're going to focus on tea for a second.
We know. You lived in the back of the man's Chinese theater. I think
all right. You were shot by an Asian chick.
We're talking about me and my breakup. I know the condo sounds nice. You just had sex with Amy.
Danny, I know you banged a fat chick last weekend, but we're focusing on tea here.
I haven't dropped the bombshell yet.
All right, I'm sorry. Right,
so that is a very weird way to end a three-year relationship, getting a picture sent to you randomly on MySpace and then having the anti-terrorism unit of the LAPD involved.
Right.
So I called him, and I begged. This was before I got involved with Batman. I begged. I said, we had 3 years together. I love you so much for everything that happened. You are good to me, and I would love to just see you for half an hour just to have closure, just to talk to you.
Oh, no.
Oh, dear.
No, that's a lie. Closure's always a lie. When you really want closure, you don't need closure. If you think about firing somebody or quitting a job, you never need closure. You'd love to call into your workplace and go, hey, buddy, F you, I'm not coming in anymore. You don't get dressed up and meet your boss out for dinner and have closure. Now, that's love. That's opened-jure, like as in opened-jure legs-jure.
You wanted
to have opened-jure with him.
Well, then very wisely, his new lady friend, I think, put the kibosh on our planned meeting.
I'll go home and get your f***ing shine box.
I got an answering machine message from Brandon that basically said to get...
Go home and get your f***ing shine box.
Look, he's angry because you put him on a 90-day leash.
Yeah.
He's resentful. He met somebody else, and you deserve what you get. And I sort of agree with him on that one. And the closure part... You're lying to him, his girl, and yourself. If you really wanted closure, the ultimate closure is no discussion of closure. The ultimate closure is zero.
Nothing.
That's the ultimate closure.
Walk off.
That's right.
Well, he said, don't ever call me again. And then, because I am filled with grace and dignity, called the next day. Begged him, just please, half an hour, can I just see you and say goodbye and give you back your stuff?
He compromised by saying he'll put his dork through the mail slot. Speaking of the microphone, baby.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I'd love to do that. You know what I'd love to do?
Yeah.
Here's what we'll do. I'll come to your house. Yeah. We'll open the mail slot.
Okay.
I'll put my dork through it.
Okay.
And I'll talk to you.
You mean Brian?
I'll talk to you through the peephole while you perform oral on me.
People, good name.
Good name for TV. All right. Okay, so you went nuts.
Yeah,
you shouldn't
have
done this.
Right. I shouldn't have done it. And then it was weird. It was weird timing, and sometimes that's life.
Mm-hmm.
Right after that, I met Batman.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't have a doubt for a second he was the one.
Mm-hmm.
And totally madly in love. At the same time, I'm human, and I had to grieve a little bit, and sometimes I'd be with Batman, and I would love him so much and feel so filled with gratitude, yet I'd go to the bathroom or someplace where I was alone, and mm-hmm. I just want to think about Brandon for a second,
mm-hmm.
because you can't be with somebody 3 years and not love them and not miss them. Well,
you can if you break up with them 3 months earlier, but go ahead. Get to the part where you cry.
Yesterday... turns out he's married.
He's married.
He's freaking married.
He's married before you?
Yes.
Oh, my God. To the cheek licker?
Yes. He married that cheek licker.
Oh, you could have married him any month in the last 5 years.
Thank God I didn't. That's the weird thing. I dodged a bullet, and I know that he was meant to be with her. He moved to Baltimore. He's gone.
Yeah.
The first I hear about it, I see a picture.
You dodged a big, tall, muscular, strapping, money-making, softball-playing, American, non-drug-using, non-misogynist bullet.
Okay.
God-fearing, parent-loving, patriot bullet.
Well, now that he's out of town.
A 6'4", 222-pound, chiseled, rock-hard-abbed bullet. An up with the sun and till the soil, salt of the earth, money making.
Let me tell you this.
Well,
warrior, well coiffed of a spokesmodel bullet.
Job.
Boy, did you dodge that bullet.
He was really good.
If you like super hardworking, dedicated white guys who do nothing but think of you and make money and do sit ups, then you dodged that bullet, my friend.
Well played.
I'll tell you this. Here was the problem why we went to the couples counseling and such.
Probably on their honeymoon right now, on top of his new lady as we speak.
She's probably already pregnant.
He's giving her the bullet train right now.
I'm pretty sure I'm going to be infertile.
He's pulling a bullet train in Maui.
She's going to be popping out her fourth kid while I'm getting in vitro.
Oh, great looking blonde Aryan types. You know they're going to be tall. He's 6'5".
She's 5 feet. I saw it on her MySpace profile. Ha ha.
His genes are so dominant that the kids are going to be 6'8".
I'll tell you what. She looked beautiful in her wedding dress, and they looked happy.
They'll have a great time playing for the Harvard basketball team.
He was not a mental giant. You know this.
All right. All right.
But he was a nice person. And here's the thing. Wondering whether he was involved in the shenanigans with sending me the mean picture and the DA.
Mm-hmm.
I just wonder if he, like, did I know him and did he really love me?
Mm-hmm. So what do you think now? Are you at peace?
No.
Now, remember we were talking about American Idol a second ago, and I said...
I want them to be happy.
I said that your glass was half full because you like to cheer for people
instead of laugh at
people who stumble and fall. You're putting a pox on this young couple.
I swear to you, I want nothing more than for him to be happy, and I really do think that they are meant to be together, and the right things all happen. It's just a little tiny piece of grief that I never got to say goodbye.
Why? Okay.
Why don't you say goodbye now? We'll mail him a CD.
please, do not cling to this. And all you people, look, lie to yourself all you want. But when you do it out loud and my ears pick it up, I will protest.
What's going on? Can I be in love with somebody, really in love with somebody, but still feel sad that something else ended?
Here's what you have. You
don't say syphilis because that was between us.
You do not know you're alive unless you're fractured off in many directions, having many feelings that are fighting each other. the idea of just going down one path called the Super Love Highway.
Yeah.
Right next to the Hershey Highway. You can't.
I'm on there.
You can't go down that Super Love Highway without slowing down and looking at off ramps and looking at signs and going, maybe I missed my turnoff. Maybe I missed the four level exchange. You can't do it. You're too complex. This is what complex people do. They go, wow, this is awesome. I'm in the Mediterranean in the super warm water. I got a pina colada in my hand, a beautiful woman on my arm. But there are people in Darfur, and they're being ritualistically tortured, and they're being abused. That's what happens. You can't simultaneously have, you can't just have one feeling. You're complex. The whole definition of being complex is being a bunch of things. You know, it's like animals. They're simple. My dog, Molly, never has more than one feeling going on at once. It's I'm hungry or I have to take a crap. It's not at the same time. She's hungry 1 minute, and then 10 minutes later, she's got to take a crap, and the next minute, she's sleepy. That's it. You're hungry, you're sleepy, and you have to take a crap all at the same time. And that's not good for relationships. Now T's a ball of tears. What happened, T? All I'm doing is shedding some light on your very neurotic situation. What's the problem?
Well, I think this is even more neurotic, but I've never been this happy. And hold on, it's going to make sense. And then it's scary to think that, you know, I could lose it.
Well, what do you mean? He could break up with you. You could.
Well, I was with this guy and
look, there's
he's already married to somebody else.
There's a much more likely chance that you will screw up the relationship. You're waiting for someone else to screw it up. So you do a preemptive strike. T, you're up in your head. Right. It's an affair of the heart.
Yeah.
They always talk about the heart. You need to be in your heart when it comes to love, not up in your head. If you're up in your head, you'll pick things apart till you start seeing microorganisms growing on the skin of your beloved partner, and you'll freak out. It's like some kind of bad mushroom trip. Have a belt of Jameson's and lighten up a little bit, would you? Save the thinking for the radio, and then shut your brain off when you get home, and just go give your man a hug and a BJ.
In that order.
Or you can do it at the same time, depending on how your balance is. All right, we need to take ourselves a break. T, your heap of tears. T's face is melted under a sweater.
I know. I feel better.
Go to the bathroom and pull yourself together.
All right, I'm together. Listen, crying is healthy. Shut up.
Yeah, but six times a day is not healthy.
It's down to three.
Twice a year is nice.
All right,
we need to take ourselves a break. Look, the phone lines are lighting up. People are sympathetic to T's situation, but I don't care. You know
why? I've never been this happy. Hey, when you don't have anything, you don't have anything to lose. Dana, I've never been this happy.
Dana Gould is coming in next. He does a spot on Huell Hauser, and we are going to break down Huell's game film with Dana Gould next.
Back to the Adam Carolla Show.
I've become somewhat addicted to court TV. You'll learn a lot from it. Like, here's something I did not know. Every 6 years, Charles Manson is eligible for parole. Does he still get his hopes up? Please tell me he's up all the night before in his cell working on his handshake. Charles Manson, nice to see you. A pleasure. Charles Manson, how are you? Fantasizing about the job he'll get when he gets out. Charles Manson, Emerson Drywall, come on in the showroom. Trying to cover up the swastika, maybe bangs.
And now Dana Gould is on the Adam Carolla Show.
Yeah, this is why I went everyone put to death, especially Charles Manson. You know, the poor Sharon Tate's mom has to make the pilgrimage out from like Indiana to be present at this guy who slaughtered her daughter's hearing every 6 years. And once in a while, they don't ever want these people to get out. So you actually have to go down to the jail. Shouldn't we have killed these people? And then there's Tex Watkins, who's had four kids from the joint, the guy who actually did the kniving. That's right. He got married. He went and slaughtered everybody.
He had a conjugal visit?
He went up on the hill. Well, here's what happened. Dana Gould, by the way, in studio. We were going to talk about Huell Hauser. We'll get to that in a second. But look, everybody, all you people that turn your nose up to me because I'm some uneducated caveman who likes the death penalty. Charles Manson got the death penalty, and so did everybody else.
I have no problem with it.
We repealed it 6 months after he got it, and thus he's been eating our food and drinking our water in some of the most expensive real estate up north, by the way.
It really is.
There is. It's majestic. I guarantee he has a much better view from his cell than you have from your crappy apartment. But first off, I want him grandfathered in. We gave him the death penalty. Then 6 months later, we repealed it. Sorry, you're grandfathered in. You got here first.
Isn't there a law on no backsies?
Yes. When no
tap backs.
Hockey got to make hockey made a helmet law in like 1983. But all the guys that were in the league before the helmet law didn't have to wear a helmet. They
last
were great.
Last guy to not wear a helmet, Gump Worsley, goaltender for the Minnesota.
Well, you know, it's ironic because if you think it's not a good idea to wear a helmet when you're skating around on a block of ice and getting cross-checked by Canucks, then who needs your brain anyway?
With a 700-mile-an-hour chunk of blood.
Frozen ho-ho coming at you.
Frozen
ho-ho. It's a frozen ding-dong flying at you.
Who knew?
Yeah, so Tex, after he did all the knifing of the families, decided to get himself married when he was in the joint, and then got his conjugal visits, and then crapped out kids from inside the joint. Is that the society you people want to live in?
All those guys go in the joint, and then they find Jesus. Does he want to be found? Like, every day, like, Jesus, it's Tex Watkins. Oh, no.
I'm masturbating. What do you want?
Turn the lights out and draw the shades.
What'd you do? Whoa? What'd you do, my son?
Slaughtered 60 people, 72.
I hate this. Look, it's a technicality, but I forgive you.
Yeah, I love you now, though. I'm good now.
Yeah, great. All right, just keep it on the QT, would you, pal?
If you really love me, can I have an extra apple tomorrow?
Okay, my son. And look, I know I'd say you're all my children, but come on. You killed 7 other kids.
Hey, dude, between you and me, now that we're buds, I got a real good joke. These two Hey! Now that we're buds.
Jesus Christ, if that gets down to purgatory, we're screwed. It's going to be a race riot. Teresa's stepdad's going to be leading the ride. It'll be just like Detroit. Now, where were we? Oh, by the way, I got to burn Detroit to the ground. Things to do.
This is amazing.
A checklist. All right. Now, enough with God. Let's talk about one of his greatest creations, Huell Howser. I grew up here in Southern California. I was fed a steady diet of Huell through my whole childhood, and he still exists. He will not go away. He's really, you know, you talk about those shows that are like longest running sitcom, you know, well, 11 years. Huell's been on for like 30 years.
Yep.
Now, and he's been doing California's Gold, and he just walks
before
around.
Before that, wasn't it Bay Area Backroads?
Yes, I remember him from my childhood. Yes, do you, Bri?
I remember Bay Area Backroads.
I thought that was a magazine.
It's a club now. It's a bar.
Oh, boy.
Want to try the John Muir Trail? All right, so Huell takes around his cameraman, Louie, and this time he's in an episode of California's Gold. He's going to the El Camino Real Bells. Evidently, Los Angeles and California was just a bunch of missions, and they were connected by these roads, and the monks would walk the roads. And lately, they made these bells, these historical bells, and they put them by the side of PCH and stuff, so you know. But they're like 8 inches, and they look like rusted Tupperware hanging from a branch that are by the side of the road. But anyway, Huell hits the road to check out the El Camino bells.
So let's recreate a little bit of this path. We're walking on what could have very easily been the El Camino Real, just hugged right up here next to the shore.
That's very true. And this is one of the reasons why they rode horses. This is hard on the shoes and on the feet.
But it could have been something as simple as just a little pathway like this.
Absolutely. Or at low tide, it could be out on the sand.
So they would have maybe walked out on the sand itself.
Absolutely. That's too bad we can't go out and see their footprints.
Busts up. First off, riders who are on strike, look out.
Here it comes.
We don't need you. We got Huell and Louie, and they're walking on sand.
Yeah.
You mean there were monks walking on sand?
And great insight you only get from this show. Walking on the ground affects your feet.
Yes. You mean it's faster to go by horseback? What about horse or mule versus jet aircraft? Yeah. What would be faster?
So you're saying that they're walking on their feet was faster than walking on their hands, and everybody just caught on.
Huel, we could go out to the sand and see their actual footsteps, but the tide washed it away many years ago.
Well, we could go out in the ocean and ask the ocean for the footprints back.
Huel, I don't know if the ocean ever gives up its dead footprints.
Who asked? Who's ever asked? Look at how many. Must be 75 oceans out there.
Huel, put your waffle stompers back on. You're going to short out the beta cam.
I have to talk to the sea demons. Footprint-stealing sea demons.
Huel, that's the gay siren song that beckons you to the ocean. The gay sirens. Hey,
look,
dude. Put your banana hammock on and come jump in me, would you please? Yes, the gay siren probably sounds like Paul Lind, right?
Yeah.
You think that's what the merman sounds like?
Come on out to the rock where we're sunning.
Oh, it's too bad Huel never got to interview the great Paul Lind.
Manatee, man for me.
Dana Gould, what would it sound like if Huel Hauser interviewed Paul Lind?
Well, I'm just standing here with Paul Lind, who is, as you all know, on the secret square, Hollywood Squares.
How are you, Huel?
What's amazing is that Paul's having a birthday party and the girls haven't gotten here yet. When do the girls show up?
I don't know.
Everyone's in the pool.
I don't see. It was so weird because we had no gay compass.
No.
We were like.
They were just like guys who wore ascots. They're like Charles Nelson Reilly and Paul Lind. There was a type of funny guy.
These guys, it's like a spray-on tan, kerchief, and they do that thing where it's like, he's a confirmed bachelor. He's never going to settle down. Now, his houseboy, Pasquale, will do his bidding. It's like, really? Do we not have gay or even no gay?
We had no concept of it.
I grew up in San Francisco, and I had no idea that Jim J. Bullock was gay.
He was that kind of funny. Yeah.
I have said it before, but I remember the Village People like, hey, those guys rock. Yeah. I mean, those guys must pull down all kinds of tail on the road.
It
I mean, that Indian.
Different kind of kiss.
Imagine him nailing chicks on the road. Yeah. And here's how I knew we didn't know gay. Nobody's older brother jumped in and went, please.
Yeah.
Those guys are gay. No, everyone's like, yeah, Village People.
Yeah,
that was
like the tough guy, the cop. The other guy, the tough guy, he's like Fonzie, super Fonzie.
Yeah, every gay guy in Hollywood was a flamboyant bachelor.
Yeah, the leather guy in the Village People was just like Hulk Fonzie, like it's just a mega version of Fonzie.
All right, let's get to our next Huel Hauser clip. Let's see, what's he doing? Oh, he's backing the truck up in the sand and almost runs over the cameraman.
Okay, here we go. This is another first. We are backing down the historic El Camino Real. This probably is a first.
Stop, Huel. Stop.
Was that Louie?
No, he backed over Louie four seasons ago. Yeah. He's in the ground. This is another cameraman.
Huel's like that woman that went driving her car through the farmer's market.
Yeah. That's
everybody is taking a... Everybody behind me is taking a nap in the middle of the farmer's market on 3:30 on a Tuesday.
Louie, are you getting this? I left a wake of humanity behind me.
It seems like my truck must have sleeping dust because everybody lays down after I drive by them.
That's got to be the world's worst draw as a cameraman. You could be doing porn. You could be doing Playboy after dark. You could be doing anything, but you get Huel.
You pull Huel.
Yeah. And it's like, I hope you brought your walking shoes and your pup tent. We're going on the road.
Oh, yeah, no. We're going to go to Washington State and find out how batteries work. Oh.
Oh, dear Lord. And what am I going to do with the camera, Huel? Oh, Christ. I have to film this abortion?
Look at that.
All right. Huel now moves on and talks to a man dressed as a monk standing next to a donkey.
We have come upon the old Padre and his donkey, and Padre, explain to everybody why this is such an important place as far as California history is concerned.
This is the El Camino Real, and this is renowned to be the only stretch of the El Camino Real, the actual,
turkeys,
the original, that's still in use every day right here.
So this little pathway right here that runs right up beside the mission is the actual El Camino Real.
That's true, very true.
Can we walk down the... Can you pull your donkey along?
If we can get old Ellie to go, there we go.
Imagine how much tail that guy pulls. You know, he's at a bar over the weekend. No, I'm not a jet pilot or an astronaut, but I'll tell you what I do. I dress as a friar and stand next to a donkey all day.
Mm-hmm. Gee, yeah. If there were turkeys around, you'd have me.
Your ship has arrived, my dear. Should we go back to your place or just do it on the bar floor? Because I have tons of wild turkeys around me while I stand next to a donkey wearing a bald cap.
And the next thing you know, old Jed's a millionaire.
That's right. I don't want to name drop, but I'm pretty tight with, I won't say, but his initials are HH. You know Hugh Hefner? warm, but not quite good enough.
Hughes, not quite. Does Hugh just, when he's, because he has a mental problem, clearly, where he doesn't understand that some thoughts you don't have to say out loud. Some thoughts you just have in your head. And does he just wake up alone in this apartment? Well, my eyes are open and now I can see things. I'm going to get up and walk across the floor.
My elbow itches. I wonder where Darfur is.
Yeah, he's like my mother. He just, whatever he thinks, he just says, you know, like, there's a box. You can buy Q-tips in a 500 box. That's so many Q-tips. Look at the refrigerator magnets. I gotta buy paper towels. It's cloudy today. Stop talking.
He pulls you into his world too because you turn into Huel. Like, you know, you know, if you leave white guys alone with black people long enough, they'll be like, hey, man, get out of it. You'll start signing. Like, people start speaking in his cadence and sounding exactly like he sounds.
Yeah. True that, peeps.
He draws you into his wicked, boring web.
And there's an interesting impressionist math where if you take Huel Hauser and just slow him down a little bit, you get Al Gore. The planet has a fever.
So Al Gore could interview a guy on global warming and it would basically just sound like Huel Hauser.
We're all going to fry. Our children will be born and their hair will burst into flame.
I don't know how we're going to top this.
Louis, the rivers are overflowing and the ice cap is melted. Yeah. Are you getting this? Yeah.
Look at that polar bear has grown a dolphin blowhole.
All right, let's take ourselves a break. The great Dana Gould as not only Huel Hauser, but Paul Lynn. Great Paul Lynn. I got to get Huel to interview Paul when we get back again. We have a tease. We have some more Huel Hauser for you. When we come back, let's take the tease.
Oh, it's going into that little hole.
Oh, look out, everybody. Double Entendre Cities, where we'll be entering next on the Adam Carolla Show.
Paul Lynn and film of another episode of PBS's Huel Hauser.
the turkeys are here for a reason, to help reenact history.
And we're getting a little help from comedian Dana Gould.
This is amazing!
On the Adam Carolla Show.
Dana Gould can be found at the Helium Comedy Club in Philadelphia this Thursday. And look, even if that's not part of your plans, hightail it out to Philly and check out Dana Gould.
Let me tell you something. Philly in mid-January.
Beautiful.
God's country.
That's right. Pack your short sleeves and your huaraches this Thursday.
The timeless combination of dirty snow and loneliness.
That'll be Dana Gould at the Helium Comedy Club Thursday through Saturday. HeliumComedy.com is where you go. Also, he'll be at the Meltdown Gallery on Sunset Boulevard January 25th.
There's a Meltdown Gallery?
Yep. Right in the back.
Let's get back to Huel. Huel is on the road. He's on the El Camino Road. Southern California, it's one of these things. We have missions all over here. And I'm an atheist, but I remember a few years ago they wanted the cross taken off the crest, the official seal for Los Angeles. And I was like, well, that's part of our history. And I'm an atheist, but I don't care if it's on the coffee mug of the chick at the DMV because it's part of this city and this state's history. So there were all these missions, and I guess the monks just walked from mission to mission. That had to suck.
Yeah.
Sandals, you know what I mean? No Reeboks back then, no New Balance, just sandals, and you're wearing a filthy robe, and you just walk. Imagine what you smelled like after you walked from L.A. to San Francisco.
And when you had to make a nature stop, you had to high up that robe and just drop it back down like the curtains at a theater.
The show is over. The dookie has left the building.
Exactly.
All right, so Huel continues his journey to find California's gold.
And what's this one right here? This is a big one here.
This is a bell of the copy of the one that is in the Dominguez Ranch in Los Angeles area, the Dominguez Ranch area.
And what is this one right here?
This is a Santa Maria bell.
And what are these?
These are...
Would people buy something like this and put it in their home?
Absolutely. These represent the various missions.
Ah.
The San Gabriel.
Oh, each one has a different name on it.
Each one has a name and a date on it.
I got a mission, Huel. Quality programming. How about that for a mission? You don't have to walk to it. You just get a camera and some writers and a script. He is amazed. It's really like he was born yesterday into a 6'5" adult body.
He doesn't discern between things that astound him. He could see a flying saucer. There's a giant silver disc coming down out of the sky, and behind it is a cloud that looks like a hammer. I can't believe
right.
it.
Huel has the exact same thing. Yes. If he saw the Hindenburg crash, it'd be the exact same thing if you produce cherry lip balm for him. If I pulled out a cherry chapstick, it would be, hey, yeah. Huel, look at what I got, chapstick.
Oh, my God, it's red, and I guess that's charred human flesh, I'm not sure, but look at, and that man's in a blue tie. Look at that.
Wonder and amazement.
Yep.
We make fun, but we're secretly jealous.
He's like a giant four-year-old.
Yeah, he sees everything through new eyes.
He's the world's biggest toddler.
Baby Huley. All right, now...
Well, that's professional comedy right there.
He's going to the bell factory to find out how the... And by the way, how many parts in a bell? Do you really need to know how a bell is made? The things that are made that have zero moving parts, like you finding out, hey, we're going to go to a coffee mug factory to get a peek behind the curtain of the mystery known as, no, it's a bell. You heat up some bronze and you dump it in some sand and that's it. But Huel will be amazed, I'm sure.
Explain to us your connection with these bells, because the story just kind of keeps growing and getting better as we go along.
Well, I saw my first bell when I was growing up in Whittier when I was around 8 years old, and when I studied California history in grade school in the fourth grade, we went to a mission, and I saw the El Camino Real bells on the highway and in front of the San Gabriel Mission, and I fell in love with them. There was a real passion, and I always wanted a bell for my backyard.
Wait a minute, you wanted a bell for your backyard?
I bet his neighbors were delighted. Yeah. It's 5 a.m., America, and I want to tell you I love bells.
The guy thinks Huel is speaking to him in code. I wanted a bell for my backyard. Wow, in the backyard of your house. No, listen to me. I wanted a bell for my backyard.
Do you not?
Do you want an owl in your barn? What? I want to buy a Mississippi handbag. I don't understand.
Huel, when you see a guy with the purple bandana hanging out of the right side of his Wrangler jeans, that means he wants a bell in his backyard.
Oh, well, we should make sure he has the yard. Oh, Huel.
Now, Huel, do you ring the bell, or do you one who listens and responds to the tone of the bell?
I like to do them at the same time. Well, you can't unless you have no bones in your body. Listen to what I'm saying.
Huel, I'm talking about raping you in the yard.
Jesus. What does a guy have to do to rape a public access host around here?
All right, well, Huel, speaking...
What do I have to do to rape you?
Inside the glory hole.
Now, when you're raping somebody, is that an act of violence or a sexual act?
Yeah. Well, the way I do it, Huel.
Now, are you going to hold me down and put my face in the pillow?
This is a real prison rape that probably went on in Alcatraz Island.
Now, would he will inappropriately think aloud while he was being raped?
No, yeah, I'm sure he would narrate. I'm experiencing what I could only describe as a searing pain.
Hold still, bitch. Yeah. Hold still.
It's amazing because the human body is really not made for certain things. You don't think about it.
I'm going to use vinegar and sand for lube.
This is nice.
Huel, you're never going to walk or, more importantly, talk again when I'm done with you.
Now, they're going to do something that says I'm going to be in a covered wagon. I don't know what that is, but there's a man approaching my teeth with a ball-peen hammer.
Huel, here's a gimp ball. You know what to do with it.
I think I'm going to remember this day for months and months.
Huel, I'm going to load you up full of drugs, and you're going to be my sex slave for the next 9 months.
Well, this is certainly not on my calendar for today. And then the next time you see Huel, he's just laying flat, and there's a guy above him. Adult male, Caucasian, 6'5", 320 pounds, starting now. Face incision along the thorax.
Huel hovers over his own autopsy.
Look at, I was full of guts. I seem to be in a cave of fire.
Dr. Bodden interviews Huel Hauser in hell. Well, speaking of gay, this next clip. Well, we'll play it once, and I want you to think happy straight thoughts, and then we'll play it again, and I want you to think gay thoughts, and I think it'll work both ways. Here's the happy straight version.
Oh! Boy, you can feel the heat!
You can feel it, you can see it, it's bright, it's constantly moving and churning.
You know, I've seen pictures of this, but I've never been in up close to something like this. This is amazing.
This is the good part.
All right, here it comes. Well, I don't want to get too close to that.
Ass blast furnace.
Yeah, man.
We were supposed to be thinking straight thoughts that time.
I couldn't help it. I thought gay thoughts.
Hard not to after the raping we just heard.
All right, well, let's think super gay thoughts this time and hear it again.
Oh! Boy, you can feel the heat!
You can feel it, you can see it, it's bright, it's constantly moving and churning.
What happened to him?
You know, I've seen pictures of this, but I've never been in up close to something like this. This is amazing!
This is the good part.
Alright, here it comes. Well, I don't want to get too close to that.
Now, Huel, it'll heighten the experience if you do an anal popper right before I reach for the tongs and pull the bell out of the kiln.
Wow, I'm laying here with you, but my heart is going jogging.
Oh, that's a good place, Dan. Why not just go out on a high note? Dana Gould, you going to hang out for news, brother?
Yeah, maybe. We never did Huel and Paul. I was going to surprise you with a Charles Nelson Reilly cameo in that.
Wow. All right. So when we come back, and by the way,
this has been a wonderful reenactment.
This is the equivalent to in the X Games, the 760 that the Hawk pulled off. This would be that in improv terms. This is Huel Hauser talking to Charles Nelson Reilly with Paul Lynn as well, right?
We are three guys, and we've gotten together, and we're going out on the town.
That's right, Huel. We're all at the big weekend, right, Chuck?
We'll do that in the news next.
And now, the Adam Carolla Show presents Great Moments in Local News.
Expert.
experts say belly fever is treatable, but it can take months, even years to cure. The best way to prevent yourself, wear a mask if you're outside doing gardening or construction, or they say avoid spending a lot of time outdoors on those windy days.
That's exactly why I stayed inside all weekend and watched football.
Doctor's orders?
Well, it was breezy.
That's a great moment in local news. Now back to the Adam Carolla Show.
Dana Gould in studio, Helium Comedy Club in Philadelphia this Thursday through Saturday. Dana, we're going to get to the news. Dana's going to hang in with us. But before we do that, we were talking about the meeting of the great comedic minds known as Paul Lynn, Charles Nelson Reilly, and Huell Hauser. You know, they have those songs about what if there was a rock band in heaven?
Yeah.
And I'm going to go one day and be with my dad and stuff. If we sent Huell to hell to interview Charles Nelson Reilly and Paul Lynn, is Charles Nelson Reilly alive?
I think he's still, I think he could still be with us. But
really?
He's in his own private hell.
That's right.
There you go. I imagine around like 1980, mm-hmm. like 79, just a very...
That was before the invention of the gaydar.
It was actually, and it was just as the 70s started to rot. You know, mm-hmm. it was just before Reagan came in, it was just a putrid, you know...
It was a rotting carcass of the 70s.
Exactly. And just like, we're going to have a Hollywood weekend. We're going to... Two TV stars, Paul Lynn and Charles Nelson Reilly.
Hi, Huell.
Hello, Huell. So what is on the agenda for this Labor Day weekend, 1979?
We're going to go to the men's room at the Greyhound station at Hollywood and Cahuenga.
What an amazing place. We'll probably see all sorts of porcelain fixtures and people travel.
Oh, I don't think he gets it, Paul. Now, Huell, you know what we're going to be doing in the men's room at the Greyhound station. Charles.
Well, it just seems what I had never understood is people are traveling and yet everyone's in the bathroom hugging. I guess it's just people are so happy to get some relief. That man thinks that other man is a urinal because he seems to be
Huell. I don't think he can.
Huell has not discovered his own sexuality yet, evidently. And I just found out that Charles Nelson Reilly tragically passed in 07.
Oh.
I've heard there's a great documentary called The Life of Reilly.
It's great. It is great, actually. I have not seen it, but a friend of mine whose taste I trust said it was really terrific.
Mm-hmm. T.
Yes.
What's going on in the news, baby girl?
Teresa Strasser with tomorrow's news. Today.
Mitt Romney won the presidential primary in Michigan yesterday, but that story does not involve a man and his testicle. This one does. A 25-year-old in Kokomo, Indiana, yesterday decided to try to rob a convenience store called the Village Pantry. He busted into the store, flashed a semi-automatic handgun, and demanded cash and a pack of cigarettes. The clerk put some cash in a bag. She turned around to grab the smokes, and when her back was turned, she heard the gun go off. The 25-year-old, Derek Kosh, had shot himself accidentally in his right testicle.
Good, he can't reproduce.
Well, there's some question about that. He still managed to get away. The police recognized him from the surveillance tape, tracked him down to his apartment. When they found him, he was, not surprisingly, in excruciating pain. They took him to the hospital for surgery. After he heals, he'll be charged with armed robbery. No word on how this could affect his reproducing skills.
Well, you can get by with one.
Yeah.
So I hear. But on the other hand, if he's in the joint, he's not going to be able to reproduce anyway.
It's interesting that they recognized him from the surveillance video, not the gouting crotch full of blood.
Right. That could be anybody.
Yeah, we're looking for a guy about 5'10", 180 pounds, with about 4 quarts of blood in his groin.
Yeah.
That's you. Yeah, I always thought that way. You're a James Bond fan, I assume. I always thought that way about his Aston Martin DB5. It was like, it had all these great gadgets, and one of the great gadgets was the license plate turned over.
Yeah.
So, he's going to stop at some checkpoint, and some Russian guard's going to come out and go, We are looking for a guy who's dressed in a white dinner jacket who fits your description in a silver Aston Martin DB5 1964 with a shield and cutting rims and machine guns. Yeah, you fit. Oh, no, wait a minute. Ours was J2775, and this is J2779. All right, get out of here.
On your way.
On your way. Have a good day, sir.
Well, the interesting aspect of James Bond in those early movies was, and especially what I think the three best ones of, From Russia with Love, Goldfinger, and Thunderball. Mm-hmm. And in those movies, he's basically a rapist.
Right.
In every one of those movies, there's a scene where the girl goes, "Oh, no, Mr. Bond."
And right.
Goes, "Oh, yes." And then he holds her down, and that would not fly. At some point between, like, 64 and now, rape went from this thing that cool guys did to a really serious crime.
I don't know who gave rape a black eye, but I'd like to find him.
And you can't quip your way out of it. You can't be on trial. "After my client said she did not wish to have sex with you, Mr. Bond, did you not hold her down and force yourself upon her?"
"Well, I come from a place where no means yes to an ether rag." It was all great. The chicks are never pissed the next day. Half the chicks I've made love with, and I include my wife, are angry the next morning. Oh, God damn, I got to take a shower.
Yeah, you just said that. "You raped me." "Well, you might say we got on with a pressing engagement." Oh, James.
I know. And there used to be a time when you could strong arm a chick a little bit, too. It's like, "Come here, kiss me." "No, come here."
Yeah. Now it's right to jail.
"Thanks, Mom." Yeah, I know. Here's what you would do. You would just ply him with booze, and then you would strong arm him, and you know what it was tantamount to? It was like giving your dog a shot. "Don't fight me. This is good. This is going to be good for you." And then the next day, you're happy.
Exactly.
They did it. Yeah.
It's for your own good.
Sterling Hayden's Guide to Picking Up Women isn't relevant anymore. Slap their face into hamburger meat, and then lay a big kiss on them.
T, you secretly like it, don't you?
Oh, a good raping?
Yes.
Who doesn't?
I'm not talking about a prison gang rape. I'm talking about a light dusting of rape.
Just a smattering, a sprinkling?
The rape fairy comes by and just sprinkles you with just a little magic dust.
It's just like you said, it's debonair.
It's all relevant. Matt Selman, who was a writer on The Simpsons, had the greatest observation once. He said, at a point where we were thinking of going to war with Iraq because of the rape rooms in their prisons, we were organizing the world's largest gangbang in the same city.
Yes. I always...
Extras were being screened.
What always used to make Dr. Drew secretly laugh, although he never wanted to do it in the microphone, is when I got very uppity. There was a time about 10 years ago when a lot of feminists would explain that rape is not a sexual crime. It's a crime of violence.
Yes.
And I would always do this, and Drew would always bust up, but he'd always have to turn the mic away so people didn't know what a lech he actually was, what a sicko he was. But I'd go, "Drew, I want to be ultra clear about rape. It is not a sexual crime. It is a violent, violent crime where you orgasm at the end." It would be no different. It would be no different than if you were at the ATM and I came up behind you and I pistol whipped you and I robbed you. And I orgasm. And I would go through all the scenarios about me robbing liquor stores and then having the orgasm at the end. It is an act of violence where, you know.
They say that arsonists will often orgasm as they watch a flame go up. So really, it's forest rape.
I would,
it's like raping Malibu.
I would, I'm going to get you, not whole. I would argue that it is a sexual crime for the folks that are actually having the orgasm.
Right.
That's my argument. I'm not condoning rape. It's a violent crime for the person who's being raped, but it is definitely one of... As a matter of fact, if you remove the orgasm from it, I don't know that there would be the rape.
Well, Andrea Dworkin said that all sex was rape.
She's my kind of gal.
That's a famous quote. Yeah,
all sex dated is her rape. For a while.
Yeah.
All right,
that's what you know, when you show up to meet your date to go to the prom and she's wearing an all sex is rape sweatshirt. So it's like, you got to lower your expectations for the evening.
Yeah, the prom theme is take back the night.
Right, exactly. Well, that was always the bumper sticker, "Stop rape," was always like, what do I do now?
I got your rape kit corsage. It's a wrist one.
I'm going to have to take a scraping now.
All right, T, what else going on?
All right,
on
we have time
news?
For one more story. Do you want to hear about a genetic test for baldness or Jessica Simpson's crazy dad, Joe?
I like Joe, because okay. We'll do that. We'll take a break, and we'll do the baldness.
Okay,
good. Give me Joe now, the world's creepiest. Like, how do these... The guy's a preacher one minute, then the next minute he has frosted tips, and his shirt's undone to his navel, and he's wearing a Zodiac medallion. He's like, listen, when I saw those big double D's popping out of my 14-year-old, I knew she had a career.
Oh, God.
Oh, God, really? Damn, Dad, I'm going to vomit all over the ET reporter. I've seriously heard him talking about his daughter's double D cans and how you couldn't ignore them. All right, give me his creepy story.
Well, most people believe that Jessica Simpson had nothing whatsoever to do with the Dallas Cowboys being knocked out of the playoffs by the New York Giants last Sunday. You've heard about this, Dana, right? That she's ruining the she's cursing the team and Tony Romo's mojo.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, Terrell Owens
the
cries.
Curse of the Bimbino.
Bimbono, the curse Bimbono, of the Bimbono.
That's why
the
I get the big
legendary curse of the yeah exactly.
Nice. Right.
And of course, Terrell Owens cries when he talks about that, and I of course love that.
Right.
Turns out, it might not have been Jessica who messed things up for the Cowboys and put the curse of the Bimbino, Bimbina on them, but her creepy, overly intrusive father, Joe. Now, you may remember seeing a lot of pictures of Jessica vacationing in Mexico with Tony Romo during the two-week stretch the Cowboys had before the game.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a lot of football players vacation with their wives and or girlfriends, and you don't hear anything about it. But these pictures were everywhere. From Entertainment Tonight to ESPN Sports Center, and they were all dissected leading up to the game. Well, Joe Simpson may have set that all up. A so-called insider says, quote, Joe is well known for his deals with the paparazzi, where the family gets a cut from the sales of the photographs. Nobody would have known that Tony was down in Mexico with Jessica if there hadn't been those pictures everywhere. So a lot of people suspect he tipped off the photographers, causing Tony this huge headache.
This is not the Joe Simpson I know. Listen, my dad's a showbiz dad.
Of course, he's overly involved.
Hell yeah.
I told him about season 4 I was doing a show called The Man Show. He's like, huh? What is that on?
Yeah, I know. Yeah, hello?
No, we don't have basic cable. Nah. Huh? Crank Waters? What's? Yeah. You're not still swinging a hammer?
Yeah.
I was wondering how you're releasing me this jag. I just figured you're framing a lot of condos.
Yeah.
Who is worse, by the way? Worse, we'll take a break. Dana Gould in studio. Oh, think about this. Worse showbiz dad, Joe Simpson or Joe Jackson?
I would vote for...
Who's creepier?
Well, the thing that Joe Jackson did that I think made him creepier, or Freddie Lennon is also very bad, mm-hmm. John Lennon's dad.
I didn't know that.
But Joe would make the kids go door to door for their Mormonism.
Oh, really?
That's always creepy.
You mean, aren't they, they're not Mormons.
Something.
They're Jehovah's
Witnesses.
Yeah.
Yeah, they did go door to door.
You got to shuck your religion like you're selling grit.
Joe, not the food, the magazine. Yeah. It's a long story. It's a comic book. The point is, and Joe Jackson had that little penciled-in mustache that's made him seem extra slimy.
Or the worst one, Murray Wilson.
Who's that?
Brian Wilson's dad.
Oh, really? He was the Svengali of the whole thing.
Yep.
All right, we need to take a break. Dana Gould here, and we'll get the story about what to you when we come back?
There's now a way to tell if you will be bald. If you're a man and under 40, I'll tell you how.
All right.
Uh-oh.
Grab the Rogaine and go to the time machine, bald Brian. We'll take a quick break. Back with Dana Gould. Always down!
It's the Adam Carolla Show.
Hi, I'm Norm McDonald. You're listening to the Adam Carolla Show. It's just like The View, except without 4 annoying broads.
The Adam Carolla Show.
Dana Gould in studio. Dana Gould is going to be down. I lost your card in Philly at the Ether Hut. Where the hell are you
going?
Yeah,
I'm going to Uncle Lucky's Chuckle Hut.
Helium Comedy Club in Philadelphia coming up Thursday, Friday, and Saturday.
I leave from here to the airport.
Oh, really? Oh, you're going early.
That's the drag now with doing stand-up. You got to go out a day early so you can do the local radio in town that day.
Right.
So that blows.
Right.
And then you get, okay, we're going to pick you up at 6 a.m. and come on down here. All right, I'll be there. It's 2 degrees, and you get in the radio. Oh, Dana Gould's here. Dana's the top. How you doing, Dana? Pretty good.
Hey, Dana Boomer Flowax. How you doing? Hey, who's Huell Hauser?
Yeah.
You're going to reconstitute the Huell Hauser Al Gore?
No, you don't even have that much time. It's like, Dana Gould is right from The Simpsons. That was my favorite show. How you doing? Thanks for coming by. We're going to be right back. We've got, oh, dude.
Yeah, I like a lot of checking of news, weather, and traffic, and then more traffic, weather, news. We got Dana Gould sitting in studio. Funny man, Dana Gould is coming in here. Big fan, Donna. Donna Gould is in studio. You know him from The Simpsons. You're the voice of Bart or Trudy. Which one were you on that show? It's one of my favorite shows.
The voice of
Hold
Bonnie.
On, Dana. We got checking 7:14, 14 after 7 o'clock, creeping up at the top of the hour. Top of the hour, we got news, traffic, and weather. We got Captain Rob out there and Sky Captain Chopper 15 brought to you by Stadlin Brothers. It's all Motorin', Motorin' FM. We just play the song Motorin' and over again. Duna God is in studio. Donna Funny Man out here from Phoenix. Love the Family Guy, by the way. Love your work on that. Dana, great to have you in studio.
Well, thank you.
7:15 after the hour. It's 15 after the hour. It's 45 away from the top of the hour. News, traffic, weather, news coming in at the top of the hour. We got Captain Rob out there in Stater Brothers Sky Captain 5. Duna Gould is in studio.
Hi.
Duna, yeah. What's it like working on Wait Till Your Father Gets Home?
Well, actually, the show...
Dana is going to be at the McLaughlinstein's out here in Poughkeepsie coming up tonight. Check that out.
Yeah,
Dana,
great.
Thanks for dropping by in studio. 7:16, 16 after the hour, 44 away from the top of the hour. Traffic, news, weather, traffic. We got Captain Rob and the Sky Captain Stater Brothers 9 Jetcopter out there. Donna Gould in studio. Donna?
Actually, it's
Dana Gould. Dana, thanks for stopping by. It's funny stuff. Hey, take shelter. A beer koozie on the way out. 7:18, 18 after the top of the hour. We got news, traffic, and weather coming up. Top of the hour, quarter hour, 16th of hour. Coming up, Dana Gould in studio.
I was told I could plug the gig that I was
doing. Duke Snider in studio. Legendary shortstop for the Dodgers. Duke Snider in studio now. He's going to be doing a fantasy baseball clinic coming up in the old stadium. Coming up. Hey, Duke.
Hey.
All right, 7:19, 19 after the top of the hour. It's 39 away from. All right, T.
And the other thing is they include you in their gross local, we're gonna have a make out with a blind retarded woman down at the Costco parking lot. Dana, you gotta be into that. Well, actually, no, I find it really offensive.
Dana, you're going down to the Poughkeepsie Walmart. We're doing Rape a Leper.
Well, that
sounds like good stuff. So we can count on you to be down there. Dana Gould, you heard it, everyone. Dana Gould's gonna be out there. I'll tell you what, how about Sloppy Seconds? I'll go first and Floor Wax, then Dana Gould out there. 7:19, 19 after the hour. News, traffic, and weather coming up top of the hour. We got beeped out. I'll tell you, we got a compass. We got a little competition called Desecrate a Grave. We got a widow, survivor man dropped in Iraq a couple months ago. She's going to put an M80 in his urn and blow it up right down the parking lot right down here. Yeah. So it's going to be awesome. Exactly. Dana going to be there for that?
No,
awesome time. Dana Gould, everybody's got a sense of humor. Who said he didn't have a laugh? 7:19, 19 up at the top of the hour. All right, Steve. Sorry, T. Where were you?
It would be great if that was in any sense a parody. It's not. It's so spot on. And the other one is, you just get, Dana Gould, how you doing? And then they just push themselves away from the mic and organize their carts and expect you'll just go.
Dana, I caught your act at two nights ago. It was awesome.
Actually, I'm just starting tonight.
Do it.
Thank you.
Do it.
Who rents cars here? That's funny.
Do it.
They don't understand that comedy, you need a footing. It's not like I can just whip out my guitar and play the boxer. You know, I need a footing. I need to bounce off something. Comedy's the peas. It's not the chicken.
Mm. I'll tell you what, we're going to go down to the Cherry Hill Mall and execute a SIDS baby. 7:18, 18 after the hour. Dana, you coming down? Dana Gould will be there, everybody.
And I also get this. Dana's going to be playing down at Uncle Winky's Comedy Corner. And also, Larry the Cable Guy, he sold out the southern tip of the state. He's playing that tonight. We have 7 dry lake beds that have chairs on them, and he sold that out. Dane Cook playing the Western Hemisphere tonight.
Dana Gould's going to be down at Rooster Tea Feathers, which is more of a kiosk than it is a comedy club. And, hey, Larry the Cable Guy is playing a soccer stadium in Chile.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, Dane Cook tonight will be playing Nebraska. He's on a riser in the corner of the state.
He's doing 7 hours from a helicopter hovering over North America with a loudspeaker.
Can we talk about that for 1 second?
Dana Gould's playing a photo mat in Burbank.
Dana Gould is playing the bench. He's the bench near the tennis courts. His seat's still available.
Yes.
I'll be doing 50 minutes. I'll be doing a consistently funny short amount of time.
Dana Gould's going to be in an AIDS hospice in Hacienda Heights.
Yeah. Dana's going to be playing the pediatric burn ward down at Johnson's Medical Center. Dane Cook is going to be playing the moon. He has a show tonight on the moon.
I know Dana Gould is angry, as all sane funny people are, over Dane Cook having a 7-hour comedy marathon.
I just don't understand. When did the amount of time you do on stage have anything to do? And it's not just Dane Cook. It's Dave Chappelle and other. That has nothing to do with the reason you're on the stage. It's like, he's the musician with the shiniest trumpet. Well, who cares?
No.
What the hell does that care?
No.
I'm going to guess at some point in the 7-hour set, there was a lull.
Possibly. You know. All right, T. You're done with your news.
No time for that. Let me just say this.
Tomorrow's news. Today.
Thomas
Strasser.
No show needs a meal break.
He's sent out for Chinese food.
Exactly. I'm going to pee, take a shower, and be back and talk about renting a U-Haul.
I'm going to talk about some chick I have. There's cots set up in the back, by the way. People are feeling lightheaded.
It's called a filibuster. It's a thing you do to stop legislation.
All right. We'll take ourselves a break. Back to a wrap up with the truly funny Dana Gould. That's about all we have time for. Teresa Strasser is a puss on because we didn't let her talk last break.
And I've never been this happy.
As it turns out.
All I wanted to say was that Adam Carolla will be on The Tonight Show Friday night.
That's right. And Dana Gould is going to be playing Mick Gafaz.
Yeah. I'll be in a hotel room in Philadelphia muttering why.
Well, thanks, T. All right. I want to thank Doug Benson for coming in here.
Did I miss? Was he here today?
He thought he was doing Mark and Brian, to be fair to him. He was so baked. But, Doug Benson was awesome. He's going to be at the Laughs Comedy Spot in Seattle this Friday.
Doug's great.
And this Saturday, and A Gentle Loving Soul. J.J. Abrams, Cloverfield, this Friday. We're going to see it post-haste. Dana Gould, Meltdown Gallery on Sunset on Friday. And
what do I have to do to rape you?
Comedy Club in Philly this Thursday through Saturday. And you should catch AdamCarolla.com. Go to AdamCarolla.com. And catch your free 2 HD. I don't know. Just go to AdamCarolla.com and listen to a replay. So until next time, it's Adam Carolla for Teresa Strasser saying mahalo. Listen, when I saw those big double D's popping out of my 14-year-old, I knew she had a career.